been expired. Senate is back in session. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire from the Secretary if there are messages from the House? If so, would you ask them to please be read?
There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, would you please read those messages?
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee Substitute, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 8, and has taken up and passed Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 8. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee Substitute, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 9, and has taken up and passed Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 9. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee Substitute, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 10, and has taken up and passed Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 10. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 11, and has taken up and passed Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 11. Respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Kremlis, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, would you recognize the Senator from Phelps County for a privilege motion?
Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a privilege motion.
Please state your privilege motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee Substitute, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 6 be brought up for adoption.
You've heard the motion made by the Senator from Phelps. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The report is before the body. Senator from Phelps, do you care to move for the adoption and explain the conference report?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the Conference Committee report. House Bill 6 is Department of Agriculture and Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Conservation. Now, in the Department of Agriculture, we did go with a House position on the biodiesel incentive payment. We were trying to get the governor to go ahead and release that money, and then we could save that much GR. This is a commitment that we have to do, and that payment never did come, so we ended up going with the House. There was some cut in the Missouri Dairy Industry Revitalization Act. There was cut to a pavilion at State Fair trying to get GR. On the Department of Natural Resources, the differences that you might see there, Senator from the 14th, the Missouri Contaminated Home Acquisition Program, this was GR, a new decision item. We left the Senate at $3 million, and it is down to $1 million. We were able to establish a line, but not to hold the number. And we did make some reductions in this bill and various bills to try to help fund that program. In the Department of Conservation, there was a reduction. It was a compromise position between us and the House of $140,004, which was the agreement to pay the former director. And that's pretty much House Bill 6.
The Senator from Phelps moves for the adoption of the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 6. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from 14th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I would like to inquire of the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 14th?
I do.
Senator from the 14th, you may proceed.
So, Senator, obviously have communicated my displeasure in the decisions that were made on House Bill 6.
Right.
You know, today, I don't know if they are in the House committee or not, but I have mothers and grandmothers who are here today with their grandchildren. And I was talking to one of the little girls. She's 3 years old. Today, I put up a picture of a dead fetus on my Twitter page because I want everybody to see what happens when you live in an area that is contaminated with radioactive waste. And I know for some people it could be offensive, but nothing beats the truth.
Right, I suppose.
Yep. So I know that you have some interest in this. I didn't know if you had anything to say about it. I am still deciding as I'm standing here what I am going to say in regards to this. I do know that we have a challenge when it comes to the budget, but at the same time, I look at all of the other specialty items that are within the budget, and, you know, I thought that life comes first.
Well, I certainly think that in this chamber we have a lot of people who support issues around, we would call them pro-life. I consider myself in some ways pro-life. The definition is used perhaps differently, but supporting people in their lives to make sure they live long, healthy, happy lives. I thought that the $3 million that was in the budget for the people who live within the area of Bridgeton and Westlake landfills was a negotiated and a compromise amount.
It was a big compromise. I mean, with $3 million, we basically were only able to cover about 30 families or 30 households out of, I would say, 120. There are 91 specifically that are in the Spanish Village area, and then there are another perhaps 30 mobile homes. Obviously, they're not going to be at the same expense as the regular homes, but those people, too, are suffering.
Right, and, you know, I think that as a body, you know, we say that we care about people and their health and their well-being and their safety, and the idea that this would continue to be, this fund would continue to be cut is really, I can't imagine if I was one of the people who lived in this area and felt stuck in an area with my family where every day when we woke up and when we went to sleep at night, I knew that there was radioactive material, that I didn't know what they were going to be exposed to, that I, as a member of their family, as a parent, could not do anything to remove them from a situation that I considered to be harmful to their health, and that, as you have told us and shown us, that the research shows is detrimental to their health.
And there's news. I cannot divulge what it is publicly because it's not up to me to divulge it, but there is information that is going to be coming out in the next 2 weeks, and I have already had the conversation with the senator from Phelps about what this information is, but it's going to give me an opportunity to say, you know, we only gave $1 million. I did try, but this legislature decided to only provide $1 million. And I think it's going to change a lot of people's minds. I don't know if you're privy to this information or not, but I'm not going to be the one to expose what this is. But it's pretty critical, and obviously you have residents who live within the area as well.
Who live very nearby, right.
And I think what will come out publicly pretty soon is going to cause pause on what our priorities are in the state. As I said in the committee hearing in the House, that in the early 1980s, when we had a problem with Times Beach and the contamination
right.
caused by Russell Bliss, the House committee, the budget committee then, in 1982 or 1983, what they determined to do is put $3 million in the budget to buy out homes that were contaminated with dioxin and PCBs that were created by Monsanto. And they said, we're going to move this forward, and then all of a sudden the EPA comes in and says, oh, well, we better buy out these homes.
That was 3.5 decades ago.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So putting in $1 million, and there's known contamination, like the most pure contamination from the Belgian Congo in St. Louis, that, as I've said repeatedly, this is not black or white. This is not rich or poor. This is not Democrat, Republican. This is not short versus tall. This is not skinny versus fat. This is a human issue. Right. We're all people. And this is one of those times where, and there are very few of them that I get to talk about, probably a handful, where people from all backgrounds come together and they fight for life.
Right.
So to stand here and know that there is a discrepancy between what this legislature talks about when it comes to life, and I go back home and tell the nuns and tell the grandmas who are afraid to take their kids out and play in the backyard or go to church or keep their kids out, depending on which way the wind blows with this toxic air that surrounds them, I have to go back and say to these 120 homeowners and residents that, look, there's only $1 million that's available, and maybe only 8 of you are going to get first dibs at that.
Right. I can't imagine then those families who now have some hope and are so, I'm sure, grateful to you for helping to bring this issue to light day in and day out. I know you've done that work. To make us aware. And I don't even know how those families get selected, but...
Well, they have trauma.
Like
did you,
zero.
Senator, I apologize for cutting you off, but they have trauma. And a lot of the trauma that I have talked about, referenced, dealing with Ferguson is the same trauma that families are going through here. The difference is, you know, like me, going down Hanley and being at the intersection of Hanley and Page, you see what we call a county brownie, one of the county police officers, you're traumatized because you don't know what they're going to do. These families that I'm talking about, they're traumatized because they don't know which way the wind is going to blow, or on a beautiful day like today, whether or not they should have their window open.
Right. And, you know, I've got to think that with all the rain that we've had, the idea that, and I think you talked about what happened the other, maybe even over the weekend when you went out there, but the idea that toxic chemicals, toxic waste is being moved further around.
It's terrible because the way that I explain it in the town halls that I've had, and I've had 70 town halls in 20 months as of right now, and my goal is to get to 100 of them. I don't think anyone, if you add up everyone in this room, or even in the legislature, has had 70 town hall meetings in 20 months. I guarantee that is not the case. But the way that I explain this when I have a group of people in the district is this. Imagine the landfill like a tub, right? And you keep the water on like it's raining, it's raining, it's raining, it's flooding. Ultimately, that tub that you have, in this case, it's refuse and contamination and radioactive waste, imagine that tub getting so filled up. The water has to go somewhere.
Right.
And so we all know, we should know, that water gets to its lowest point. It finds its lowest point. Sometimes that's in a person's basement.
Right.
Sometimes that's in the Missouri River,
right,
which goes into the Mississippi River, which right. is why I talk to all of the senators and representatives who have a portion of a district that is right on the Mississippi River, that they should be concerned. That's why I inform them that. But when you have a tub that fills up with water, and that water is still going, it's still flowing, it has to go somewhere. And so that's part of the danger. This is not just an issue for the 14th district. Okay. It is an issue for you. Because in your district, you have Pattonville High School.
Yes.
And you know that there are walls of all the students who have died of cancer due to the radioactive waste. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yes, they're walls. My little god sister, she worked on my campaign last year. She was in eighth grade. She's now in ninth grade, goes to Pattonville High School. And I'm concerned about her. I'm concerned about her classmates, the kids who stand out at the bus stop in your district.
Right.
And in my district,
right.
Who are waiting to go to school, and they have this air that's circulating around that has known contamination in it, and the only thing I get to tell their mothers and their grandmothers who stay there at the bus stops with them is, you got $1 million.
Right.
And you're going to have to figure out how to divvy it up. Now, it's not completely the state's responsibility, because we know the federal government has absolutely failed at every single level, with the exception, as I always say, Kit Bond. He was the only, and U.S. Representative Buechner, the only historical exceptions of people who have actually fought on this particular issue of radioactive waste and contamination. The difference between what we're going through and what Flint, Michigan is going through is that you can't see it, and for many areas, you can't smell it.
Right.
You can't.
And that is a real problem. So we don't always know unless there's continuous testing going on.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly.
Out of sight, out of mind. And so, you know, that's why it disheartens me to know, even with this very difficult budget process that we're going through, is that we made the determination we're telling mothers and families, fathers, we're telling them, basically, you're going to have to wait and take that chance. We don't know if this particulate or that particulate is going to be consumed, but you're going to have to wait maybe another year. We've waited for 70 years, right? We've waited for 70 years.
Right.
But they're going to have to wait longer. You
right.
have some type of resolve. And the question to me is, where is our humanity? This is one of those situations, just like Ferguson. It's one of those, just like the unaccredited school district issue. It's one of those situations where you really reflect from within, and you think about all the things that you have stood for personally, professionally, and you think about what is the cause that you want to stand up for continuously, and it doesn't matter if there is a person here or a person there that you disagree with. What matters is you're giving that little three-year-old that I was talking to in my office today an opportunity.
A chance at life.
A chance. At one school. One. One school. Three brain tumors. One. One. And I think it's in your district, Senator.
Which school did you say?
Starts with an A. I'm probably going to say it wrong. It's a private school. It's a private Catholic school. In fact, there's a grandfather. He has a very interesting history. There's a grandfather who has had, his name is Terry, who has had, you may know him, he's really, really tall, has had cancer multiple times, and he literally switched the school that his granddaughter goes to because of the contamination that surrounds her school. Literally.
Well,
like this is we're talking about humanity.
We're talking about real people's lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't know. You can't walk into a house and necessarily tell. You can't go out in the yard and necessarily tell. Sometimes there's an odor that comes from the landfills in the area. But you can't know, and to be living there in fear, knowing what has happened to others, and knowing the, I know you've done research and
Senator, I have to tell you, I've done extraordinary research, extraordinary. So I have the bird's eye view looking down, because there are several areas in other people's districts
right.
as well, in other people's districts, including the senator from Franklin, including the senator from the 1st, including you, including the senator from the 13th, including Kansas City. All of those areas have the same contamination. All of those areas, the same contamination. And to know that the state can't... I think the federal government is doing an awful job.
Well, I think that the federal government... Right. I think that the federal government has been complicit in the problem and needs to help with the solution, and I don't think that they have been willing to do what they need to do. But these are our...
These are all
fellow
people.
Missourians.
When you go to war, when you go to war and you're in combat, and I haven't, but I come from a military family, generations of people who have served in the military. Whatever your bro or your girl who's next to you, that's your family. That's all
right.
You got.
Right.
In the state of Missouri, when we have a situation like this, you depend on your brother. You depend on your sister in war. You depend on that. There's no question. There's no pause.
Right.
It is about saving and safeguarding our democracy. In this particular case, we're picking and choosing who lives and who dies. That's as simple as it is to me. We're picking and choosing who lives and who dies.
You know, again, the idea that if my family were stuck living in this situation and I didn't have a way out without some help or support, I really don't know what I'd do. And the idea that we can do something and we have continued to pare back our response to this concern that you've brought forward to us, not only this year, but in previous years, it's pretty disheartening. And we thought that we had pared it back at $3 million, and you said, thank you, this will get us started, we're ready to move forward. We're not done. This is the beginning. I heard you say words similar to those on this Senate floor. And now it comes back from conference cut in a third. And it's 8 families that you estimate that will be able to move?
It depends on how much the Department of Natural Resources decides to take. I don't have much confidence in them right now. I will just tell you, I don't have confidence in the Department of Natural Resources right now. I don't.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean by it's what they take.
Well, administrative costs.
Okay.
I mean, we've been fighting back and forth on the fiscal note, you know?
The cost to put into place the program, too.
At one point, I think they said they needed 60 new employees at one point, something absurd for 91 homes. For 91 homes. Senator, I guess part of your district is around the airport, correct? Because
right.
I know you took some of the...
Highway 70 is the northernmost part of my district.
Okay, so I have a little bit of the southern part of 70, and then you have the rest of it. But as I've been looking at the buyout program that the airport was part of, St. Louis City was part of, frankly, St. Louis County just a bit, as I look at the buyout. Now, this is really fine print. I want to say there are 30, maybe 40 per page on both sides of all the homes that were bought out. You can't see this, but this is the list.
I can see a lot of writing.
This is the list from the St. Louis Airport Authority of all the homes that were bought out around the airport for expansion. And I promise you, 30... 40 per page, and you see I'm still flipping.
I see.
I'm still flipping. I've met some of the families, by the way, whose homes were bought out. I've met some of those families and learned about more contamination outside of the Bridgeton landfill, which the Department of Natural Resources doesn't want to investigate, by the way. I have oral histories. Did you know, Senator, did you know that investigations and the Department of Natural Resources are based on, in part, oral histories. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yes. And so there's an area that I have been told, you know, I've done about 80 hours of oral histories, right? So I've been, people who are as old as 85 years old who are giving me their oral histories. So there's an area, in particular, right around the airport, which is my district, that doesn't exist anymore, but it was a community. And what happened there is there was a landfill. And in the oral histories, you have Monsanto that dumped. You have McDonnell Douglas that dumped. You have Mallinckrodt that dumped. You have all of these major institutions. And I found out I've been doing FOIA requests with the EPA, and the EPA has said throughout all of these years of concern, based on the oral histories that I've done, that they have absolutely done nothing to engage in this pollution, this contamination, this toxic waste in this particular area. The difference between this area in my district that I'm talking about and then the Bridgeton landfill, which is also in my district, is that people are listening to the Bridgeton landfill, and the people who live in this area by the airport, many of them have the same cancers, the same autoimmune diseases, and the state is solely responsible. Solely responsible. I don't have confidence in this new director right now. There are a couple of times where her staff has slipped. A couple of times. I believe that we should be a team from day one, not a team at day 30 after you've made five mistakes.
Well, I don't know what those are, so I don't know how to respond to them.
I'm making a point as I'm talking about it.
Okay.
Because I want it to be part of public record, the conversation that I'm having right now. So, as I said, I've done FOIA requests for several decades on what to the EPA of what they've done, not done. The response has been they've never done anything, which means that the state has been solely responsible for remediating this area. My oral histories tell you that there is radioactive waste that was dumped, and they're building right now on top of this old landfill. They're building on top of it, which is no different than what happened to the senator from the first in his district, because he has the St. Louis County Board of Elections. And it sits directly on top of a landfill where Mallinckrodt used to dump all of their old equipment. So I called him, or I texted him this weekend, and I said, you need to find out what watershed, because it was flooding, it's been raining, and I said, you need to find out what watershed that's in, because whatever homes are within that area, those folks can be in a very vulnerable situation. You know, but I'm already doing the work, kind of in the 24th, kind of in the 13th, kind of in the 1st, and in my district, and so I can only hold on to so many things at a time.
Right.
You know, and that's why I want to make sure that the people who lived in this area who are suffering from the same conditions as families in around Coldwater Creek and then right by the landfill are addressed. So I want to make sure that this little money that these communities are getting, this community is getting, actually works out for them. I hope that we don't come back. I hope and pray that when I do another analysis during veto session, when I do another, because I do quarterly analysis, I do the same thing with the nursing homes. On a quarterly basis, I go through the 36 nursing homes that I represent to see what the quality of care. I'm going to do the same thing on this. And I promise, if I do not see movement on this little million dollars, then I'm going to talk about it publicly. And as I said, I'm going back. There are going to be a couple of announcements, public ones, national ones, in the next month. It's not up to me to say what they are, but I'm going to make sure that the Department of Natural Resources, as well as the Department of Health and Senior Services, is responsive to this. Now, you know, I haven't had too much of a problem with the Director of Health and Senior Services. He's actually been a good guy. He's met me on Sundays. He's traveled around the area. He's pretty good.
Good.
He's pretty, so I don't have much bad to say about him, except I do not have a date for him to come into this area and use his Geiger counters. I've been asking that for the last 4 months, and I don't have a date. I don't have a date. I want a date for things to be tested in this area that I'm talking about, because a lot of people have been impacted. They're building on top of this area where employees can get sick. And I've already had a conversation with the senator from the 4th about this area already. and where he works, you know, the workers who are in this area, I'm concerned about their health as well. If we cannot take care of the well-being of people who are born and raised in Missouri, who are trying to just live their lives, then who are we? Right? Why are we meeting? Why? I believe, especially as soon as this information comes out, that we will need to go into a special session. Either you're pro-life or you're not. Right now, as someone who has voted on both sides of the issue in the legislature, you know, I'm starting to feel that I'm more pro-life than the people who purport they are. Starting to feel that. Because when you see these grandmothers and these babies, you're wondering, is this the one? Is this the one that gets cancer? Right. Is this the one that gets brain tumors? Is this the one? That's what I'm wondering. I don't know that. So I hope that, you know, DHSS has done a much, 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 much better job than DNR. But I'm watching. I'm watching closely. And I'm going to keep watching closely as if it were my own babies. Anytime that I see a deviation of taking care of this community with the $1 million, I'm going to talk about it publicly. And I may be nice. The likelihood is that I'm not going to be. Thank you very much for the inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
I would like to inquire of the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 14th?
I do.
Senator from the 14th, you may proceed.
Thank you. Senator, we've had this discussion back and forth.
Yes.
I didn't know how, you know, I was going to respond on this issue. I do want to thank you for talking to me throughout the session on the issue. You know that I'm greatly and grossly displeased the reduction from $3 million to $1 million because basically if the Department of Natural Resources does their job, it still only means about 9 families get resolved. Only 9 out of 120.
Let me say a couple things, if you will. You're selling yourself awful short on what you've accomplished here. If we get this budget passed, and this goes to the governor's desk, and he signs this budget, what you have accomplished is you have established, without a question, that the state of Missouri views this as a huge problem. Dollar amount's important, but I don't think the total dollar amount is nearly as important as the amount of scrutiny and the amount of interest that you brought to this problem by doing this one thing. And the reason I say that, typically that wakes EPA up. Typically that wakes some of our U.S. reps and senators up. And I think if you give this time and we work this right through the Department of Natural Resources and we drag EPA into this, this line can actually net multiple millions of dollars.
Well, it should be billions. It should be. And I do think that you're right. That's why I'm not going off the handle right now, because I do think that you're right to some degree. I do.
Yeah.
Because this is the first time in 70 years that this state has even responded to such a dire issue. We're living with the legacy. We're living, Missouri is special because we're living with the legacy that our own president, President Truman, decided to implement. He made that decision for our freedom. He sacrificed something great and big for our country's freedom, and people in my district and in the St. Louis area, even in Kansas City, are living with the legacy of the decision that Harry S. Truman made. We are, 70 years later. So it is a point. It is a point to our federal elected officials. I tell my interns this all the time. Excuses, what is it? I can't believe I forgot. I've been saying this for 18 years. Excuses are tools of intolerance or incompetence.
I agree.
Excuses are tools of incompetence that build monuments of nothingness, and those that use them seldomly amount to anything more. That's basically the status of our federal elected officials, with right. a couple of exceptions. And by the way, I'm a Democrat.
I know.
I'm a Democrat saying that there are two Republicans that stood up on this issue more than Democrats ever have.
Well, and I think you're going to see more Republicans stand up on this issue when we're fighting to keep this line. You can't believe the support from different caucuses that came together. Things that members of your own caucus gave up, and a lot of that was geared towards this. So to me, I don't want you to talk a defeatist attitude here. The $1 million means something when a state, and all states are right now in budget crises. You know, it would be great if we had this line at 20 or 30 million, but I'm telling you, you're not going to believe the attention this gets you and the help that I think and the pressure it puts on EPA and the federal people to start doing their job.
Yeah. I think the only caveat I would have, I agree, that's why I'm not going off the chain right now.
Yeah, I understand.
But, Senator, you are standing with families
right.
that have lost loved ones, who have had to change their lives, their courses in their life because of where they live. There's the mother, one of the mothers who was here today, one of them, she said, Maria, I was in this area. She was with her granddaughter, the 3-year-old I told you about. And she said she purposely moved out to O'Fallon to get away from this area. She purposely moved. She has means to move her family.
And a lot of them do not.
And most of them do not.
Right.
Senator, this is what I spend my time on. I said to myself, if I do nothing else, the next 2 years as I am in office, the last 2 years that I get to serve in this chamber, I will spend all of my time trying to help these families. And that's the most pro-life thing I have ever done outside of Ferguson and outside of unaccredited school districts.
And I think what you have done here is you give these people a voice. And now, as I told you early on, sometimes we just try to establish a line. You did a lot more than that. You got $1 million in that line. Then you have the opportunity to keep building on this, and then that triggers a lot of federal drawdown that gets this whole thing.
Well, you can't get reimbursements. You can get some reimbursements. But I can't emphasize enough, and I'm going to ask at this point that the people who are covering this in the press gallery, please pay attention to this. Please talk about this.
Yes.
I'm asking. Because we've waited for 70 years. We've waited for 70 years, Senator. And while this is a good move, it is, while it makes a statement, it does. There are still people that I have to go to. There is a woman right now, Vicky, who lives in my district in Ferguson, who is the third generation of people who were exposed to this contamination. And she says, the last week, I got my update and it doesn't look good, but I'm going to keep on praying.
Good for her.
You know, multiply that by 1,000. That's what I deal with every day. So even though, Senator, this is a great move, I want you to understand, as a servant, what I deal with every single day when I am not in this building.
And I do respect that. I know your passion. We talk a lot. And you put this on the radar of the governor. You put this on a lot of people's radar. And I'm telling you, you've gotten farther in 20 months than anybody else has gotten in 17 years. So don't go home feeling defeated. Don't sell yourself short on the accomplishment you've made here for your folks. And really the entire state. It's not just one area that is immediately affected at this time. So I commend you on what you've been able to do, and I will.
I need you, because if I come back, if we come back and there's $50-70 million in some supplemental budget, and I get five more people with brain tumors, I'm going to be disgusted, because they're waiting. It's a good, as I said, it's a good move, and that's why I'm not going off the chain.
And you know, you do have the opportunity, if this thing gets rolling a little bit, then one of the big opportunities you've got, we've set a little money aside for supplemental next year, you've got the opportunity for DNR to go in there and ask for a lot of money. So,
well, I hope there'll be champions, because they have not. Again, I've gone back through DNR records to 1980. I can tell you I've gone back to 1980.
I think it's going to be a new day for them.
I hope so, because I'm going to be doing a remonstrance if I have to.
I agree.
And it's not going to be nice. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to be worse than the governor's remonstrance.
Just let this thing work itself just a little bit. I think you're going to be quite surprised on what
I told you I made this decision. I needed to talk about this, talk it out, be real, because I am concerned. These are a group of people. Half of them probably didn't even vote for me, but I'm fighting for them anyway.
Yep.
I'm still fighting for them.
What we do.
You know, and for people who come from different backgrounds to come together on one issue, life, something that this building talks about, life. And I know that the people who I talk to right now, I know that half of them are going to die. I know that, Senator. Half of them are going to die. Half of them. And maybe by the time we get to next session. Now, when the blood is on your hands like that, what do you do? The blood is on my hands. And that's why I'm fighting the way that I'm fighting, so that I can help these families, because they do not deserve what's happening. They do not deserve this whatsoever. Period.
No, I agree.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Does any other senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from Phelps, you recognize close.
Mr. President, I close on the adoption of the conference committee report.
The Senator from Phelps moves that the conference committee report for Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill No. 6 be adopted. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail will vote aye. Those to the contrary will vote no. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle-Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from Barton. Senator from Barton votes aye. Senator from the 15th. Senator from 15 votes aye. Senator from Butler. Senator from Butler votes aye. Senator from the 9th. Senator from the 9th votes aye. By your vote of 29 ayes, 4 noes, the conference committee report is adopted. Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I now move that Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 6 be third read and finally passed.
You've heard the motion made by the Senator from Phelps. Does any senator desire to be heard on the bill? Does any senator desire to be heard on the bill? Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 14th?
I do.
Senator from the 14th, you may proceed.
I'm keeping you at your promise.
Do what?
Keeping you at your promise.
Don't worry. I'm
watching you like a hawk, too.
I'm kind of able to weasel a few things.
I'm going to watch you like a hawk.
All right.
If I have to come down to Phelps, hell or high water.
Well, we'll go out to dinner.
Hell
right
or high
now,
water.
You can't get there right now.
But I will find, what do you call it, a Johnny boat? What do you call that?
We'll go out to...
John Boat. I will find whatever I need.
We'll go out
and
to...
I will hunt you down.
We'll go out to Keyhole's Ranch and have dinner. He's cooking. Oh, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Phelps, we do not address other senators by their last name in the Senate chamber. Does any senator desire to be heard on the bill? Does any senator from Franklin, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Franklin.
I do.
Senator from Franklin, you may proceed.
Yeah, I was just curious that you may have been referencing a senator's wife. Is that inappropriate to do that?
I was, yeah.
You were. I think that's what it was. So I think the president there might have gone a little bit overboard with gaveling you, because when you're addressing someone's wife, I thought it was proper to use their name. So.
Well, I'm going to take my lecture.
You'll take yours? Okay. That's all.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Does any other senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from Phelps, you're recognized. Close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Senator from Phelps moves that Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 6 be read a third time and finally pass. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail will vote aye. Those of the contrary will vote no. Madam Secretary, please read the bill and call the roll.
Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 6, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Agriculture, Department of Natural Resources, Department of Conservation, and the several divisions and programs thereof. Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Eigel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Krauss, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from the 9th. Senator from the 9th votes aye. Senator from Green. Senator from Green votes aye. Senator from the 2nd. You are not recorded, Senator. Oh, I'm sorry. You are recorded as an aye. Senator from the 5th. Senator from the 5th votes aye. By your vote of 29 ayes, 4 noes, the bill, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Hearing no objection, let the journal show the titling and perfecting motions were made and carried.
Call of the business will be suspended, and Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 14, having passed both branches of the General Assembly, be read at length by the Secretary, And if no objections are made, the bill will be signed in to the end that become law. Secretary, read the bill.
Truly agreed to and finally passed, Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 14, an act to appropriate money for supplemental purposes for the expenses, grants, and distributions of the several departments and offices of state government and the several divisions and programs thereof.
With no objection being made, the bill is so signed.
Senator from Cole, privilege
you rise. Thank you, Mr. President. Would you recognize the Senator from Phelps County for a privilege motion?
Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I have a privilege motion.
Please state your privilege motion.
Mr. President, I move that the Conference Committee report for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 7 be taken up for adoption.
You've heard the motion made by the Senator from Phelps. Those opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The report is now before the body. Senator from Phelps, do you care to move for the adoption and explain the Conference Committee report?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the Conference Committee report for House Bill 7. And House Bill 7 involves Department of Economic Development. It involves the Department of Insurance, Financial Institution, Professional Regs, and also the Department of Labor and Industrial Relationships. And I'll just hit a few high points here. Because we went into conference with little GR or no GR, some of the members gave up a lot. Missouri Technology Corporation, Wood Energy Tax Credit, Main Street Program, a lot of these things, they know who they are. They stood there beside me. We had a major reduction in a business recruitment and marketing program that was somewhat of an oversight. We should have left a little more money in there, and we did. So there were some pretty good haircuts taken. The Department of Insurance, Financial Institution, and Professional Regs, not much in there except other funds for the Nursing Education Incentive Program. That's something the Nursing Board does to do scholarships. I try to get some other boards and commissions interested in doing that, and all I've gotten is nasty emails from them. So they're not quite so interested in helping. In the Department of Labor and Industrial Relations, Second Injury Fund, it grew quite a bit. We were able to make that transfer. We made some transfers for a lawsuit settlement to try to clear that up. Senator from 13th was helpful last night in getting to a point that everyone was pretty, well, not happy, but tolerant of where we're at with labor standards, their admin division, and with the administrative law judges. And with that, Mr. President, that's House Bill 7.
The Senator from Phelps moves for the adoption of the Conference Committee report on Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 7. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 7th?
I do.
Senator from the 7th, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I heard you said MTC, what did it end up? It was at $5 million. Did it end up being zeroed out?
No, 2.5.
Okay, so it got cut in half.
Yes, and that was trying to help me fix a problem with GR numbers because I went to conference. As you know, we had an amendment on the floor that put me kind of behind the eight ball. We haven't passed circuit breaker, which dug me a little more of a hole. So some of this stuff members voluntarily gave up in both caucuses, and that was a big deal trying to get to where we didn't make such draconian changes to point counts in 10 and 11.
All right, I have two questions for you.
Yep.
The first question is, where are we at on the bottom line? What did the supplemental end up being after the conference reports were done?
After the conference committee report, supplemental is about $100 million, which is what the governor and the House and the Senate committed that we would try to do. Now, it will show up on some lines as like $198 million, and all that is money that we know and projected we could have went ahead and used in the budget this year. I thought it was more transparent to do that. The House didn't want to do it that way. And in the end, because they were beating me over the head because I was so messed up and out of balance with some of the stuff that I had done, not knowing I was coming in $105 million GR in the hole. And so that makes the bottom line look a little bigger, like 198. $63 million of that is cost to continue Medicaid. Then there's some other funds. So that's not, it's real money, but it's not real money. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the $100 million supplemental, and I suggested to help us a bit that we not book quite that much money, and because of the uncertainty and the fact that we went into this budget cycle, happened to cut between $450 and $500 million out of the budget, facing a bunch of withholds, we would like to be in a position. Because if you go into withholds, then you have one branch of government that's in charge of how money and how government works. So we're trying to avoid that desperately.
I can understand that. I know that the House Budget Chair was very committed to trying to keep the withholds at a minimum.
Yes.
And I understand you working with him to try to get that done. I'm okay with that. Is it accurate? Are you aware that the House is adjourned for the day?
I was not aware of that. I'm probably not too surprised.
And they have have they adjourned for the day, but they've adjourned until Monday, which means that if any of these bills do not get a third reading, then it automatically will trigger a special session.
Right.
I just thought that was an interesting move on their part. I must say, maybe a little hat tip to them, that's the position we're in right now. But I wanted to make sure the body knew that with the House adjourning until Monday, that it's on us now to complete these bills. Otherwise, we do go to a special session. So I just thought that we should all be aware of that.
You know, probably for the first time in history, and you know, the senators that served on the conference committee and senators that served on the Appropriations Committee, there was a lot, gave a lot to help us get a budget. Or else we had to go back to the drawing board a week ago. And so for the first time in history, every senator that served on a conference committee signed a conference committee report. And not every House member signed, but every senator signed. And there were some of them that's not very happy, I can tell you, on both sides of the aisle.
I'm well aware of that.
But they know we need to get a budget done. I think they feel, as I do, we probably got to the best place we can get without doing some further legislation. And as we get to some of these other bills, I will try to explain the situation that we're in related to Circuit Breaker. And you know, I do think we can get there, and maybe it's smart on their part, maybe it's short-sighted on their part, but I trust in senators' ability to make their own decisions.
I'm a little impressed, I got to be honest with you.
Yeah.
but let me ask you this.
That
last
can go
question.
Both ways, you know?
Right, it can go both ways. Last question for you, and then we can move on with getting this completed. How much do you think the governor giving us the budget later than usual has compacted some of the conflict and problems that we've had with this budget?
You know, it seems like in the budget process, Representative Fitzpatrick has been good to work with, and I've tried to keep that line of communication open. I've tried to be respectful, and to give you a for instance, when the House got the bill, They had the bill 34 legislative days. Tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock, the Senate has had it 17 days.
Well, everyone in here saw you shake your head yes. So you're saying that it would have been nicer to be able to have a little more time for us to do our work.
You were on that committee.
I was on that committee.
You did a lot of the slogging. And
I was there.
We were trying to kind of get to some decisions before the House really got some of the budget bills to us. So a compliment to the committee. I don't know if they've ever had that little of time before. And you folks on the committee certainly helped me a lot in a lot of different ways with your individual knowledges. And I think that's how appropriations committees have to work. Not one person can know the budget in the different departments. But within that committee, I'm telling you, I learn a lot from members and their comments.
I did too, and I think our staff was very impressive.
Just really
on the ball.
There's no way an old veterinarian could do this without some really good support.
All right, well, I'm going to come back and talk to you when we get to 8, but I just wanted to point that out where we're at right now. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator, the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 24th.
I do.
Senator from the 24th, you may proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. I know that everybody worked very hard on the budget.
Yes.
You know, we had to cut a lot of things that are important to a lot of us. And for me, those are issues that have to deal with taking care of people and social justice kinds of issues, but also moving our state forward and economic development, because a few years ago we put into place a corporate tax cut that lowered our budget, and I don't know how we lift ourselves up out of that hole. And I think as we deal with the budget and as we look to our future and say, what are we going to do about this? How are we going to fund things like our public school system, probably the most important institution in the state? How are we going to fund things like helping those people who are so poor and but for help from the government cannot afford to take care of themselves or their families? How are we going to make sure people have access to health care that they can afford? And so in this particular budget bill, the Missouri Technology Corporation, to me, was one of our bright stars along the way as we look to develop economically and welcome small businesses and startups to the state of Missouri. And we've cut their funding back significantly. And I just, you know, I didn't serve on the Appropriations Committee. I don't know the conversations that went on around that particular line item and where the decision to cut there came from and what other considerations were made. So I know that here I am late in the process. I did, I think, send in one of my memos to you that asked for certain things to try to fund MTC at a higher rate. But I know that didn't happen. I'm just wondering what the conversation was around Missouri Technology Corporation.
Yes. It was important to everyone on the committee. It was very important to the pro tem. He's been very involved in economic development over the years. And yesterday, in an attempt to break the logjam and look for some GR, because I was taking a lot of flaming arrows, he and some members of the committee said, you know what, this isn't going to kill us. We'll go after it next year. The pro tem had an airport in Joplin that's been in this budget cycles for quite a number of years. He said, take it out now. It saves $1 million. Use it on the project for the buyout. Use it wherever you need it. So it wasn't just, and it's both sides of the aisle. I mean, people on that committee from your side of the aisle was giving up stuff that was near and dear to their heart. And they weren't ecstatic about it, but they kind of understood where we were at and what we were trying to get to at a very short window of opportunity. So this has been a pretty tough budget cycle for the committee, and I've tried to keep some things in that were important. important, and we lost some things that were really important.
So when you say a very short window, you're talking about the time frame that the Senate and the conference, so we lost, well, we were 17 days, I guess, shorter than.
We had 17 total legislative days.
Shorter than the
To go back through the budget, which we were prepared. The people on the committee did a lot of extra work. They spent, even though we didn't have the budget very long, they probably spent more time in the committee this year than they have a lot of times in the past, because we had to prep and then reevaluate when things didn't turn out the way it looked like it was going to do. It was a lot of work for them.
No question in my mind that our members of the Appropriation Committees here in the Budget Committee on the House side worked very hard under a really compressed time frame, because we did get the budget 2 weeks, maybe a little over 2 weeks late from the governor. A month late from the governor.
Yes.
Okay, so that is obviously a problem, and that is...
It is a problem in one way. In another way, the fact that we get it later, we probably got a little more accurate data as to what consensus revenue estimates are, if they're becoming true revenue or if they're not. So even though it compressed things, it also probably gives us a little more and better data to make some changes in the budget, data related. And so a lot of the lines that were closed at the Senate position were because of the better data and farther into the cycle. So it's a plus and a negative, honestly.
I understand. So, Senator, I mean, Missouri Technology Corporation, again, the idea that this fund would help fund entrepreneurs and people with ideas to encourage them to come to the state of Missouri to set up their small businesses, to start growing them here, and hopefully to stay with us throughout the longevity of their business. What do we think, you know, we're at a point in time now where I don't know that there's anything that we can do to change this line item, nor do I know if there's any a sense from the body that
not,
that's a the
yeah,
right
there's
thing.
Not really any extra money. I mean, we would have to cut something somewhere else that may be as important to, you know, other folks. So it is kind of what it is. Now, the governor put $1 million in. I think we're actually at 3.5 million.
Well, I think a million of that is lapsed, and I don't think there is any lapsed money. So, I'm not sure about that. I think 2.5 is actually where they've landed, because that lapsed money, my understanding is there is no money in that. Is that right?
My staff tells me that they can get gifts from other areas from economic development if they run too short.
So that means that they have 2.5 available to them plus whatever they get from other areas?
They have some flexibility within the department, because Department of Economic Development probably needs flexibility as more greatly than other departments.
Right. So I guess, you know, what I'm going to leave you with, and I appreciate you taking my inquiry, is I think this is another critical area we need to look at if we're going to grow the budget, and if we're going to grow our state, and if we're going to attract more people and get more people to stay here and create jobs for the state of Missouri. So
it's a tool in the toolbox that we need to keep. And one of my committee members had a very important tool that kind of got away from us, and we can do letters of intent and things like that that might help persuade the department to shore up some of these areas.
Well, so that's,
and we're willing to do that.
That's a way to go about encouraging them to.
Yes.
So may I ask you, are you saying you're willing to do that?
Yeah, we've talked about it, myself, Representative Fitzpatrick, and with some Plex there. Letters of intent happen a lot, and that encourages some fund switches and things within these departments that are economic development motivated.
So, Senator, I always learn from my campaigning that I'm supposed to follow up and make sure that what we ask for happens. Would it be all right if I checked in with you and encouraged you to... Thank you. I think
I try
it's
not to say stuff that I don't think I'm not blowing smoke, okay?
No, I know. But I know you've also, you dealt with all these budget bills, and I'm focusing on a few areas. So I understand that this must be an overwhelming task. It's not one I've taken on. So
well,
if you
I
don't
share
mind
that,
that
task.
I
you know, a lot of people
forward
have
a little bit on that
me.
Area. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Senator,
Thank
for the
you.
Inquiry. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Cape Girardeau, what purpose do you rise?
Do you comment on the conference committee report?
Senator, state your purpose again. Are you ready?
Comment on the conference committee report.
You may proceed, Senator.
Mr. President, I want to take you back to October of 2013. If you remember, from October 1st to October 16th, the federal government of the United States entered into a shutdown. And during those 16 long days, it was the third largest government shutdown in U.S. history. One of those departments that was shut down was the National Park Service. Being in the business world for the last 24 years, if I had to curtail business operations, I would not curtail a profit center. But that's exactly what the federal government did, because the U.S. National Park Service is a profit center. FY16, they generated over $589 million from recreation fees, park concessions, cabin rentals, and lodges. In the legislature, Mr. President, we talk about economic development, attracting jobs, and new investment. The Missouri Partnership is a public-private economic development partnership designed to increase the visibility of the Missouri as a globally competitive business location to attract new jobs and investment to the state. Now, Mr. President, sitting on appropriations for the first time this year, I'm fully aware of the difficulty it has been to come to an agreement on an FY 2018 budget. Missouri's revenues grew by only 3.1% since last fiscal year, but revenues would need to grow by 7% to fully fund the budget. Missouri Partnership is one of Missouri's...
Senate will come to order. Senate will come to order. Senator from Cape Girardeau, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Missouri Partnership is one of Missouri's geese, which can actually lay a golden egg. But yet, Missouri's about to kill the golden goose in House Bill 7. In FY16, the Missouri Partnership recruited 12 companies to Missouri, which benefited several senatorial districts. The senator from the 24th was very fortunate because she got two of those 12. Other senators that benefited were the senator from Buchanan, Senator from Phelps, Senator from Franklin, Senator from Newton. Also, the senators in the Kansas City area benefited by getting three of those 12, and senators in the St. Louis area benefited by also getting three of those 12. Mr. President, those 12 companies added over $204 million in new capital investment, creating almost 1,500 jobs with an annual payroll of almost 60 and a actually over $60.5 million in FY16. Now, since 2009, the Missouri Partnership has recruited 109 projects to Missouri, which averages just about one a month. And during those years, it's contributed capital investment of $1.2 billion, creating 13,000 jobs with an annual payroll of $700 million. Now, on June 20th, 2016, President Barack Obama gave the keynote speech at the Select USA Investment Summit in Washington, D.C. Now, Mr. President, I want you to know I'm not normally noted for quoting President Barack Obama, but I will in this case. He said, "An agricultural tech company from Surat, India, met economic development representatives from Missouri, and within a year, it established its U.S. headquarters in St. Louis. That company was lack gene technologies. The president went on to say, we want more success stories like these. Mr. President, I ask who's going to tell the world just how great this state is for the business investment and attract businesses that will grow our economy and create jobs. By not funding Missouri Partnership, Missouri is following the lead of the federal government, which shut down a revenue source. And we are about to do the same. By defunding Missouri Partnership, we are handicapping the Missouri economic development efforts, which would go a long way in closing the revenue gap we are now facing, struggling with this FY 2018 budget. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Does any other senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from Phelps, you're recognized. Close.
I close, Mr. President.
The senator from Phelps renews his motion that the conference committee report on Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 7 be adopted. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail will vote aye. Those of the contrary will vote no. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibla, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from the 7th. Senator from the 7th votes aye. Senator from Barton. Senator from Barton votes aye. Senator from Butler. Senator from Butler votes aye. Senator from Green. Senator from Green. Senator from Green votes aye. By your vote of 30 ayes and 3 noes, the conference committee report is adopted. Senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, I have a privileged motion.
Senator from Phelps, we are on the next motion.
Oh, the third reading motion?
Correct.
I'm sorry, Mr. President. Mr. President, I now move that Senate Committee Substitute, House Committee Substitute, for House Bill 7 be read a third time and finally passed.
You've heard the motion by the senator from Phelps. Does any senator desire to be heard on the bill? Does any senator desire to be heard on the bill? Hearing none, Senator from Phelps, you're recognized. Close.
Mr. President, I close.
The senator from Phelps moves that Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 7 be read a third time and finally passed. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail will vote aye. Those of the contrary will vote no. Madam Secretary, please read the bill and call the roll.
Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 7, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Economic Development, Department of Insurance, Financial Institutions and Professional Registration, Department of Labor and Industrial Relations, and the several divisions and programs thereof. Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibola, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
By your vote of 30 ayes and 3 noes, the bill having received a constitutional majority is declared passed. Hearing no objection, let the journal show the tiling and perfecting motions were made and carried. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please recognize the Senator from Phelps County for a privileged motion?
Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a privileged motion.
Please state your privileged motion.
Mr. President, I move the conference committee report on Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill 8 be taken up for adoption.
You have heard the motion made by the Senator from Phelps. Those opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The report is now before the body. Senator from Phelps, do you care to move for the adoption and explain the conference report?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the conference committee report to House Bill 8. And House Bill 8 is a Department of Public Safety. I'll go over a few of the changes and kind of where we're at. On the criminal record system fund allocation from Highway Patrol to the Director of Public Safety, there was a lot of concern with local sheriffs, with local chiefs of police, that they were lapsing around $2 million a year in this fund, the Highway Patrol was, and they would like to have use of that fund. So kind of with the agreement between the groups, moved $1.945 million into the director's office that can be used to buy the fingerprint scanners, kind of the modern-day technology. We did fund the work comp insurance premiums for the volunteer fire departments. Neighborhood watch program survived, and there was a request from the department to buy for the Highway Patrol to buy a new scale maintenance truck, and that these scales on the interstate that weigh the 80,000 pound trucks, this truck allows them to pull the top of those scales off and work on them. Most other trucks that we would have in department bag don't have that ability. So that's pretty much the bill, Mr. President.
The Senator from Phelps moves for the adoption of the conference committee report on Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill number 8. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 7th?
Do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Senator, you may know why I'm up and what I'm going to ask about in this bill. Did my little sandbagger make it?
Yes, it did.
All right.
Now, let me tell you something here, and maybe this should stay in the room we were in. But anyway, last night, the House was taking a pretty strong stance on this, that's a waste of $150,000 GR. And I'm like, I don't agree with you, but it was raining. It had been raining all day long, and we'd had a flood. We got to the table, and he said, if you don't mind, let's put that back in there. I thought you might look at it that way.
Right. Well, when I heard the senator from Barrie, I was watching and listening during that time, and he made the comment, aren't we going to double this appropriation for all the volunteers who had shovels in their hands, filling those sandbags by hand? And I heard Representative Fitzpatrick say, well, we can exceed the differences. Then everybody laughed because of exactly where we were. We were not going to exceed the differences on it. But I do appreciate the Senator from Barrie pointing out that the timeliness of that expenditure cannot be underestimated.
Well, and I think that it would have been hard to hold that item. And we don't wish more rain at this point, but I think the weather did help you a lot in that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's funny because right before that, I read an article about the gauges.
Yes.
Did we do anything to restore the funding for the gauges on the GSA water levels?
You know, I think there's a discussion continuing there. DNR is going to help us with that. And you see, United States Geological Survey has an office and a water division in Rolla, Missouri. So they kind of collect all that data. And so they are capable of kicking in as well, because there's one of the few U.S. geological surveys with that big of a water division anywhere. So,
well, as a person who floats about, 7 to 10 times a year, that website is incredibly important to someone who's in Kansas City who wants to drive 5 hours to get on the river, knowing what that water levels are. So I would appreciate having accurate information to decide whether the 11 Point or the Jack's Fork is navigable or not.
I think that will stay in, because not only is that important for recreation, but for scientific data collection, extremely important.
I'm for both. Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Barton, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire, the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Barton.
I do.
Senator from Barton, you may proceed.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how what's your level of expertise on that criminal records fund?
Well, I had a meeting in my office with the Director of the Department of Public Safety, people that represented county sheriffs, and people that represented chief of police, and folks that represented the highway patrol. And they were lapsing about $2 million of that money, and the locals felt like they were just being denied access to it. And so therefore, it was somewhat of a gentleman's agreement in that room that this would how we would set it up.
And I'm wondering, I guess maybe even more fundamentally, exactly what do we purchase with that criminal records fund, and what funds?
Well, there's a couple things that goes on. We do use it to buy some of the scanners, and I mean, they're able to on site scan your fingerprints. You know, otherwise you got to take them in the station, you got to roll the fingerprints, and then it may be good, it may not be so good. This is according to what they tell me, highly accurate. I do not know, but then it's also part of this fund, and what the Highway Patrol does with the lab, they buy some of the scanners as well, but they store these records. They're kind of the storehouse, I guess, of these criminal records, making sure that evidence is not broken in that. But there's got to be somebody, kind of a depository, I guess would be the term, that people can go and get the records. And there's a charge for accessing some of the records, and locals were upset. Hey, we're collecting majority of the data. They're storing of it. Then we got to pay to use it. So I think that this will go a ways to relieve some attention.
And so is it totally funded by fees? Is it fee funded?
It's fee funded.
I see a nod over there. Apparently, yeah, That's the case. Do you have an idea on what the balance is that's left in that fund?
It's normally about a $10 million fund,
floats pretty steadily at that area?
Okay. The brains of this operation is telling me that the appropriation is normally around $14 million, $14.5 million, and they've been lapsing a little more than I told you, maybe $3.5 million. So they're not using this entire fund. But it's also, as you can imagine, as time goes on, having these records available and storage is an important deal in criminal cases.
Sure. Okay, thank you. And next time I'll ask you what your staff's level of expertise is on this.
Better than mine.
Thanks, Senator. I appreciate
thank you.
Your, take my inquiry.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Buchanan?
I do.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. The alert system update and expansion of $250,000, is that for Blue Alert?
That is. Let me explain what we found out about that system. And it was not a conferenceable item. It's something we passed the Senate budget, the House passed. The Blue Alert system, I think the governor thinks is an important system, but probably more importantly associated with the Blue Alert system is the folks that's been doing the Amber Alert system are no longer going to offer that service. Apparently they went bankrupt or their equipment's old or whatever. So it was important. I think everyone realizes the importance of the Amber Alert system, and so that made it a little, it's not, they can incorporate the Blue Alert system in it, but I think the main thing that we had to protect here is the Amber Alert system.
So the $250,000, right, would sort of cover for both?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So do we have to pass the Blue Alert bill in order to continue to have the Amber Alert system in operation?
Well, you know, it's always nice, I guess, to have legislation that supports, but most of the legislation say subject to appropriations, and we have appropriated the money. I think we can move forward with the Amber Alert without the Blue Alert, but I don't know that. That's probably something that one of the lawyers in research would have to answer.
Well, my question is real simply, like, if the Blue Alert bill didn't pass, would it still happen anyway with this appropriation?
I'm hoping that we'd get the Amber Alert at least.
Okay, so you don't know about the Blue Alert at all?
I do not.
Okay. Is it even possible that we might be able to do Blue Alert? I mean, is it...
It they're shaking their
head. You haven't ruled it out.
They're saying that we could do the bill, but also that within the language of the budget bill, we do provide for incorporating Blue Alert if they go forward with that system.
Really? Well, that's interesting. So we put the money in the budget, and it says Blue Alert, and the governor can spend it.
And Amber, yes.
So when the governor goes and runs ads with his secret dark money committee and says that the senator from Buchanan is blocking Blue Alert, it's really just a big lie, isn't it?
Senator, I don't know that I can answer that question.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, if we put the money in the budget, then it is just a big lie. And I'd like the governor to know that I don't appreciate it. So thank you.
Sir.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Does any other senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from Phelps, you recognize to close on the adoption of the conference committee report.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close on the adoption of the conference committee report for House Bill 8.
The senator from Phelps moves that the conference committee report on Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill number 8 be adopted. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail will vote aye. Those of the contrary will vote no. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Eigel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from the 13th. Could you repeat? Senator from the 13th votes aye. By your vote of 33 ayes and 0 noes, the bill having received a constitutional... Oh, I'm sorry. That was for the adoption motion. But 33 ayes and 0 noes, conference committee report is adopted. Senator from Phelps. Senator from Phelps. Third read motion.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. I needed some help there. Mr. President, I now move that Senate Committee Substitute, House Committee Substitute, Conference Committee Report for Senate Committee Substitute, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 8 be read a third time and finally passed.
You've heard the motion made by the Senator from Phelps. Does any senator desire to be heard on the bill? Does any senator desire to be heard on the bill? Senator from Phelps, you are recognized close.
I close.
Senator from Phelps moves that Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 8 be read a third time and finally passed. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail will vote aye. Those to the contrary will vote no. Madam Secretary, please read the bill and call the roll.
Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 8. An act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Public Safety and the several divisions and programs thereof. Senators Brown, Chappelle-Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from Christian. Senator from Christian votes aye. By your vote of 33 ayes, 0 noes, the bill having received a constitutional majority is declared passed. Hearing no objection, let the journal show the titling and perfecting motions were made and carried. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you recognize the Senator from Phelps County for a privileged motion?
You want me to go? Yep. Senator from Phelps, what person you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a privileged motion.
State your privileged motion.
Mr. President, I move that the conference committee report, okay. Senate committee substitute, and the House committee substitute for House Bill 9 be taken up for adoption.
You heard the motion by the Senator from Phelps. Those opposing the motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The report is for the body. Senator from Phelps, do you care to move to adoption and explain the conference report?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the conference committee report on House Bill 9.
Thank you, Senator. The Senator from Phelps has moved the adoption of conference committee report on Senate Bill 9. Does any senator desire to be heard? Any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Phelps recognizes close the adoption of the conference committee report.
I close.
The Senator from Phelps moves that the conference committee report on Senate Bill 9 be adopted. Those with opinion of the motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard,
aye.
Riddle, Rizzo, aye. Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from the 5th, Senator from 5th votes aye. Senator from Callaway, Senator from Callaway votes aye. By your vote of 31 aye, 1 no, the conference committee report is adopted. Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I now move that conference committee report for Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill 9 be read a third time and finally passed.
You've heard the motion by the senator from Phelps. Does any senator desire to be heard on the bill? The senator from Phelps is recognized close.
I close.
The senator from Phelps moves that Senate Committee Substitute House Bill number 9 be read a third time and finally passed. Those of opinion the motion shall prevail vote aye. Those of contrary vote no. Secretary, read the bill and call the roll.
Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 9, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Corrections and the several divisions and programs thereof. Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
By your vote of 31 aye, 1 no, the bill having received a constitutional majority is declared passed. Hearing no objection, let the journal show the tally and perfected motions were made and carried. Senator from Cole.
Senator from Cole.
President, would you please recognize the Senator from Phelps County for a privilege motion?
Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Privilege motion.
State your privilege motion.
Mr. President, I move the conference committee report on the Senate committee substitute, House committee substitute, for House Bill 10 be taken up for adoption.
You heard the motion made by the Senator from Phelps. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The report is before the body. Senator from Phelps, do you care to move for the adoption and explain the conference report?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the conference committee report for House Bill 10. House Bill 10 deals with the Department of Mental Health and also the Department of Health and Senior Services. These are two pretty large departments, as you're well aware, and a lot of this is cost to continue in some of these areas. Our mental health population seems to be growing. One of the things we might point out, funding for additional Missouri Health Net participants due to a change in asset limits, at passage of House Bill 1565, there's $7 million worth of GR there. That total line is like $19.3 million just on the Department of Mental Health. And we had to make a commitment by federal recommendation that the CMO sorts expansion partial year funding for a 17-bed facility for sorts prisoners hoping to transfer to normal living, and they would live in this area for a while, being monitored and possibly be able to at some point get back into society. And there was some, the governor made a reduction in the provider rate increases of 3%. The House and the Senate restored 1.5, and there is on the Department of Health and Senior Services, there were some questions on level of care funding, the point count, and I'll try to, this will also apply to House Bill 11. When I had a conversation on the floor when we passed our bills out of committee with the Senator from Butler about, and this doesn't, about nursing home providers and providers of home-based services. And as that bill was leaving the Senate, we had not yet passed circuit breaker, so I had funded this with general revenue in addition to the House's 0.5% restoration. The Senate was doing half with general revenue and moving the point count to 24. The House had this set up that if we did not pass circuit breaker, the point count would move to 27, and their 1/2 restoration of the cut would go away. And so, leaving here, we're pretty good, except I lost $45 million when we passed foundation formula. And I'm not speaking against foundation formula, but I went to a conference in trouble, so to speak. So, by not passing circuit breaker, what the House did, they set up money to fund a senior service protection fund, and then they made the changes from 27 points to 21 points and half of the restoration of provider cuts from this senior protection fund, which they had booked $56.2 million. And I did not have that $56.2 million. So what I did with them, not knowing what we do as a Senate, I gave up the general revenue that I had used to restore half of the cuts to the providers in order to move a level of care point count to 24 rather than 27. A lot of the folks told me that they can live with 24. 27 is pretty draconian. It affects a lot of people. So I did the trade-off. Now, providers are not very happy with me right now because I didn't do what I told them I was going to do. I told them what I was going to try to do. I try to never make promises because I know this process gets a little tedious. So when we went to conference, I had a $106 million hole of general revenue that I did not have. And needless to say, they were beating up on me pretty good. But they did allow, and using some money in general revenue, to take the provider 1.5% that I'd funded in general revenue and move it to where the level of care point count would be 24 rather than 27. Now, I guess what we have to ask ourselves, the way this is set up, if we take up and we pass some version of circuit breaker, whether we phase in over 2 years or we do it in 1 year, we would get half of the $56.2 million. That would be enough to take the point count either down to 21 or restore half of the provider cuts. And depending on who you talk to, which is most important, to the folks that are being evaluated, point counts are a big deal. To providers who really are having a hard time paying the bills because our reimbursement rates on Medicaid are making a lot of our bigger and nicer homes operate out of the owner's pocket at this point in time because of provider rate rollbacks. So I'm not making an excuse. I'm just telling you kind of where I'm at on this and some of the trading that I did, because if I didn't intervene and do something, the House was fully prepared and within what they had set up, they're right to go to a 27-point count and no provider rates at all. So where we're at now, we're at 24-point count and no provider rate. With full funding or full money from the circuit breaker, we could restore down to 21-point count and half of the provider rate. There is no mechanism in these two bills for the move, for the provider rates to be fully funded, or for me to move that money. So this is the cards we've been dealt. This is what we've been dealing with this week and to the House. They did make some concessions and lower that point count, which I felt was really a big issue, as well as did conferees and members of the committee. So that's kind of where we're at on these. It's not where I want to be. I don't think it's where you want to be. But the House has been pretty good at putting the responsibility of where we end up right back in our laps. And I know that's not a good place for a lot of people to be. So that's kind of a short synopsis of some of the drama that we've been through this last week, trying to move some of these bills along. With that, Mr. President, I'll try to answer questions.
Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Berry, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire of the senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Berry?
I do.
I thought, Senator, you did a very good job in explaining the process. You know, I had some concerns about that process and the conclusion we came to on the points, and how it might divert. It's more of a cost shift, which we may be diverting the recipients to a higher level of cost for their care, and that was a concern to me. And also the process of, I believe, a 1115 waiver would have to be sought to change the point total also, which will take a while. But it is what it is. We had to work with the House, and of course they came down from 27 to 24. 27 would have been disastrous.
Yeah, which it would have been disastrous. And they used the GR that I put in on the provider rate enhancement or rollback, that cut, that got burned in doing the moving from 27 to 24.
Yeah, and we're just talking about 2018. We're going to have another budget cycle.
Right.
And we can analyze to see where we've gone with that. But at least, I think we stood pretty firm on trying, of course, as hopefully most everybody here knows, that the current point total is 21
yes.
to be qualified for a nursing home or in-home care. And so
now, when I talk to providers and trying to kind of split this up a little bit, because we hadn't moved on circuit breaker, provider said we could live with 24. 27 is really terrible. And I mean, this 3% cut that will stay in place if we don't pass circuit breaker is going to be really tough on providers.
Yes, it is.
My fear is we're going to reach a point where a lot of people that's been in the nursing home business and knows how it works, that they're selling out and getting out.
No.
I've had many of them tell me that. So I tried my best. I just didn't have enough money to go where I needed to go with it.
I know you didn't. That's the reality of things. And
it is.
And you kept reemphasizing that all along. Well, and I had told people, okay, they want full funding. And then I said, okay, where do you want me to take it from?
Right.
You want me to take it from DESE? It's got to come from somewhere.
And we've kind of naturally in the past, there's areas where there's a lot of GR. There's a lot of GR in corrections. But corrections kind of is what it is. I mean, we have to pay the bill if we lock them up.
The bill.
There's quite a bit of GR in DESE. Well, our Constitution says we have to fund public education. There's quite a bit of GR in higher ed. And guess where Governor Nixon went and other governors have gone? And eliminated more and more funding to higher ed, which when we talk about economic development issues, that can get to a point that it bites us.
Yes, and our kids going to college are coming out with higher debt all the time, and a lot of it is linked to Medicaid.
Yes, that's right. And it grows rapidly, and as someone pointed out in the committee last night, the reason it grows rapidly, there's people in need, and I understand that. But we're good people. We spend a lot of our budget trying to help those folks. I think provider rates and point counts is something that helps everyone, but I'm not absolutely happy where I'm at.
No, I know.
It's probably the best that we could do with what we have.
Yeah. I do want to point out that I'm really getting more worried all the time on the survival of our Medicaid program.
I agree.
We have a lot of optional programs. We've seen tremendous increases in spending on the Medicaid pharmacy program.
Yes.
And that's optional.
Yes.
And unless we can control those prices, I don't know what's going to happen in 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now.
Well, there's tremendous uncertainty in drug costs. When someone goes and picks up a prescription, oftentimes, we want to blame the pharmacist of why it's so high, and that's not his role. He's pretty bound by law on what he can and can't charge. So if that bottle of 30 pills costs $1,000, he don't get any more money than if the bottle of pill costs $16 or $20.
Yep.
It's kind of the same deal. So that is a huge concern, and we've seen generic drugs grow so rapidly, so quickly. And then there's the uncertainty of what is Washington going to do as we go forward with health care. We've realized, and I think everyone's recognized, it's a huge cost on society. And I guess one of my big concerns is that, when we expanded Medicaid in some states, President Obama moved about $900 billion out of Medicare. And so then all of a sudden they're not such an attractive population for doctors and hospitals.
Right.
Because reimbursements aren't so good. You know, I just don't want us... I mean, what if tomorrow they said, you know, Missouri, you've got this sweet deal where you pay 40% and we pay 60, in some states it's 50-50, or they're paying 60, feds paying 40. If they came up tomorrow and said, Missouri, you're going to have to match 50-50. We don't have no choice. We can't support you anymore. You talk about knocking a hole in the budget overnight.
And there has been talk of that in the last few years about because Missouri really has a pretty good deal.
We have one of the best, and we have one of the best in the nation.
Yeah, and it could go away.
Yeah, and you know, there's people that, the actuaries and people that are looking at these numbers and studying these things all the time. And if you think that we're kind of running on the radar, it ain't happening.
No. You know, there's even been talk about, in the federal level, of discontinuing the CHIPS program.
Right.
You know, which is for lower-income families with kids up to 300%. And it's a 90-10 deal.
Right.
But yet the federal government is thinking about doing away with that.
Yeah. And that is a good program.
Yes, it is.
Young kids.
It is. But if the federal government is going to that extreme and thought process about eliminating a program like that, that's scary.
It is scary. I'm going to help you, or thank you for all the help you've given the committee and all of us because of your extensive knowledge in 10 and 11 and helping us get to a point we think we can kind of live with and give me the opportunity to change what we thought was really important to what we know is important, the point count. So thank you for your expertise.
Well, thank you for your hard work.
Thank you.
The Senator from Phelps has moved for the adoption of the Conference Committee Report on Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 10. Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the First, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the First.
I certainly do.
Senator from the First, you may proceed.
Well, Senator, I'm going to start by offering an insight that might not be shared by everybody in this body, but given what has transpired in Washington today, I will say that I pick up the microphone in this discussion with some confidence that no matter what we do, the worst we would be doing is making the second worst healthcare policy decision in this country today.
Is that a compliment, sort of? Yeah.
So I want to focus on 10. Yeah. And I will take up 11 separately.
Right.
And there are similarities, but there are also, of course, meaningful differences.
Yeah.
Among the differences is that on 10, I think we had three separate efforts on the Senate floor to put amendments on to 10 to try to help the home health care, the home provider population. I think the senator from Buchanan had an amendment that failed by maybe two votes. I think the senator from the 24th had an amendment that failed by a little bit more than that. And I think my amendment missed it by one vote. So I guess I want to preface this discussion with the notion that the Senate position that went into conference was just barely the Senate position that went into conference. There were several repeated efforts that consistently gained bipartisan support to try to come in higher than we did. And I'll just express the notion that I would have hoped that that would have resulted in both the House and Senate conferees feeling compelled or at the very least inclined to err on the side of coming closer to the Senate position than we did. And feel free to tell me if I'm conflating it with a different bill, but I'm pretty sure we had three very solid cracks at the Senate position being considerably more aggressive than it ultimately was.
Right. And I think one of the problems that we faced when we got to that bill and being more aggressive was it became painfully aware due to the lack of general revenue because the amendment, like I say, fully funding the formula, which I'm not saying is a bad choice. That might have been the right thing. But I hope you realize that at that point, I didn't have a position of being more aggressive.
Well,
than the position to kind of take what I was dealt.
Tell me about the state of the supplemental, though, because I've got to tell you, everything that I hear is that we have $100 million-plus dollars in latitude. Some would say it's more than double that amount, and I recognize that reasonable minds might differ. But it's not as if there's nowhere else to do it. And it's also not as if this body didn't send the last governor eight out-of-balance budgets, and I'm not advocating for that. But my God, if there's a population that we're going to err on the side of, I would hope it would be the folks who literally need home health attendance to get out of bed in the morning.
And the bottom line, the $100 million, and of course you have to realize a lot of this depends on consensus revenue estimates coming in where they're supposed to be, and now they're in FY17, they're certainly not.
Well, and I understand that, but you'd also agree with me FY17 isn't done, and that can still change.
Absolutely.
But it can also get worse. It can get better. I think we recognize that. And so there is some reality to the fact the governor may very well be in a position to have to make withholds even with the budget being where it is.
Absolutely. And even with the $100 million, you know, lottery is projecting about $30 million under. Now, we could have a massive Powerball, and we can make a lot of that up. But that affects a lot of funding in education. So that discussion's out there. Right now, you know, our revenues are coming in around 3%, which is what we adjusted it to. But if you also adjust to what we're owing in refunds, like $264 million that we haven't paid out, then that revenue goes down to a little below 2%. So, as you can see, $100 million seems somewhat extreme. When I was desperately trying to come up with GR, I thought it was really extreme. But you have to realize that general revenue, that is our discretionary money, that's all we're talking about here, is $9.4 billion, which is a lot of money, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But $100 million is just a little over 1%. And that 1% can disappear really, really quickly, because we started out this year with a budget that was going to be last year's budget. We were going to have to cut $450 million out of it moving forward. So when you say $100 million is, you know, that's just way too much. There have been times we've run it down much lower than that, but then we set ourselves up for a tremendously high GR-funded supplemental budget. We were extremely lucky this year that we had made some good decisions last year, and we only had $45 million in the $240-some million supplemental spending budget. That's very unusual. Sometimes that supplemental portion of GR may be well over $100 million. It could be 150, even approaching $200 million at times. So I'm not defending the decision or arguing that it was the right decision. I guess I'm in the position of saying don't lose focus of the fact that we're talking about 1% of the money. And right now we're running way under 1%. Of what the consensus revenue estimates were year previously. So that digs us a deeper and deeper hole.
So well, we still have June 15th ahead of us, though.
Yes.
Well, and let me say this. I understand what you're saying. I really do. In my view, if we err on the side, we have two choices that we could have made. And unfortunately, we're, I think, past the event horizon on this. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But we could have chosen to do what we've done, which is make life very uncomfortable in a way that is irrevocable for people. I mean, we're talking about a lot of Missourians, many of them paraplegic, many of them quadriplegic, in 10 here, bless you. We can make life really uncomfortable for them and a little bit more comfortable for the governor. or we could make life manageable for the population that we've been serving because they have no other means of care or no realistic, attractive. They don't have good alternatives.
Yes, I understand.
We can make life, we could keep life as it is for them, and I get it that maybe we have to make tougher decisions on withholds in a few months than we want to make.
Which is one of the things we're trying to avoid,
right?
With the limited revenues, you know, and boy, do I ever hope it turns around, both for a state budget and for our family budgets. You know, that's important too. It's important to everyone that works out there. And you know, I've had a few meetings with the governor about some budget issues. He's not been one that has come and said, you guys got to do this or else. I think he was trying to accept the realities of where he was at. With the rainy day fund pretty well spent when he came on, and with daily balances very, very low, and having to limit how many dollars of refunds they can, that's actually the taxpayers' money, that they can send out because they simply don't have the money to do it.
Well, I hear what you were saying. I would have much rather the conference report left us in a position where we still had a chance to help this population in the way we are today.
And that's what that's what I told you. We have a chance.
Well, I don't think so. On 10, maybe, and walk me through this, because I know there's talk of frankly harming other poor folks in the circuit breaker. There's talk of that, which we may or may not do. But even if we do that, my understanding, at least as to the items at 11, it's not as if that plugs the entire gap on the reimbursement. And I don't know that that's true on 10 either. I mean, please enlighten me.
No, it would do 50%. I had done the other half with general revenue,
right,
which I had to take out to avoid a 27-point count. The House had, they had these bills written very obviously what their intentions were. If we do not pass circuit breaker, we go to 27 points and cuts are gone. And so I did the best that I could do with what I had. So when you say we could have done better, we can still do better because all we have to do is pass circuit breaker and fund the senior protection fund.
But there will still be a cut in line 10.800, 806, and 810. I mean, at the end of the day, there's still going to be a cut in those lines.
There will be a 50% cut in provider rates that I had funded with GR.
Right.
Yes.
And
there's not a mechanism to recoup that.
At this point, there's not, and I'm glad you make that point because, let's face it, tomorrow is the constitutional deadline. And I don't know, maybe the House is still in session, but my understanding of their plan was that they were going to adjourn until Monday, so they are gone.
Right.
And so we in this body have two choices. We can either adopt this budget or we can effectively force a special session on at least one or more budget bills.
Or pass circuit breaker.
Well, you can't even, Senator, passing circuit breaker still leaves these populations compromised. I mean,
you get 21 points on level of care, and you get half of the provider rates restored.
But not all of it.
Trust me, they're going to be real happy with that.
Well, but they're not going to get it. Well, they're going to be happier than they are today. Seniors who can't afford to pay their own rent will be less happy. But
right. But
there will still be a cut in provider reimbursement.
I guess
under every scenario at this point, there will be a cut in provider reimbursement, unless short of a special session, which I'm not advocating for.
Right. But I guess the question becomes, and we had this question in committee, which population is more vulnerable and more fragile? Is it the in-home or is it the folks in the nursing home? And I maintain that's a terrible choice to have to make.
Well, Senator, and I would say there's another person you could make uncomfortable, and that's the governor. And I hate to say that. I'm not advocating for passing a budget that's maybe $10 or $15 million out of balance, but in terms of fragility of population, seniors who can't afford their own rent, people who need help getting out of bed in the morning, and Medicaid patients in nursing home beds who have no other shelter, forgive me, out of those four, I think the governor can be the one to make the tough decisions. All we need to do is grant him the authority. And we're not doing that. And I hate to say it, I can't help but think that each of the last 8 years, we probably would have done that anyway.
That we probably would have.
I saw nothing but out-of-balance budget after out-of-balance budget after out-of-balance budget go to our last governor, who was forced to make difficult withhold after difficult withhold after difficult withhold. And now suddenly, $15 million in GR that may or may not have to get covered in the supplemental is too much to ask for some of our most vulnerable citizens now that it's 2017. It frustrates me greatly, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the first, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the Senator from the 24th?
Senator from the 24th, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the first.
I do.
Senator from the first, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, you and I have discussed House Bills 10 and 11 throughout the process, and I know that there are some provisions. I've just been talking about these three particular lines in House Bill 10, but I know that there are some provisions that are of concern to you as well.
Right. And in addition to what you're talking about, actually, if you look at page 41, line 23, you'll see over $6 million from general revenue that actually could have been federal dollars used to help support women's reproductive health care for them to access different kinds of care, including family planning, screenings, pap smears, all those kinds of things that women need in their reproductive health years. And we refused to take those federal dollars because we didn't want to follow the federal mandates that came with it. But so instead, there's $6 million out of GR just to try to ensure that we did not need to send people to Planned Parenthood because they perform abortions at one of our Planned Parenthood centers.
And not with this money. Not with state dollars.
Never with this money.
Right.
We don't allow that in the state. But this money could have gone to help well women and women who are thinking about becoming pregnant or are pregnant with their well woman or reproductive health services. And I keep saying women, men also.
Sure. So not only are we going after seniors who need help making rent, not only are we going after people who need home care attendance, not only are we going after people who are in Medicaid nursing home beds who don't have a roof over their head otherwise, we are also going after the women of our state and men.
The women and men, and, you know, quite frankly, families. I mean, women who do have abortion, 61% of them already have children. They already have a family. So we're talking about women of a certain age, women of reproductive age, and the families that they take care of, support, are a mother to, for example, in the cases where they already have
children.
That's
hundreds of thousands of Missourians.
Right. And you know, what else is in this bill is the language. And, you know, we've had lots of conversations, and I've had lots of conversations with people involved with the budget about the idea of legislating through the budget process. So I want to remind you that in Section 10.714 of this budget bill, used to be in Budget Bill 11, got moved into 10, in this section is a reference to that money cannot be expended directly or indirectly to subsidize abortion services as defined in Section 170.015 of the Missouri Revised Statutes. Well, I don't have that in front of me, but I know perfectly well what it says. And what it says is any organization, any physician, any hospital, any facility that even suggests to a woman or refers a woman for an abortion can no longer access these funds. So we're not just talking about trying to block Planned Parenthood because it is the one place in the state of Missouri where a woman can exercise her right to get an abortion, but any other place that even refers women. And frankly, not all abortions are because, well, there are abortions that occur because not, maybe not the mother's health that's at stake, but that a fetus is so, the anomalies are such that that child, that person who, that fetus that would become a child should everything progress normally, things have not progressed normally, and that will never be a child who survives outside the womb, or will never be a child who survives outside the womb for very long, or has such severe fetal anomalies that that child will never live a pain-free, safe, and healthy life. So there are other places that provide abortions that just aren't as vocal about it, but they do it because it is the right thing to do for the health of the family. So it disturbs me greatly that we have this language in here that expands well beyond what I think the intent of the language was, which was to stop Planned Parenthood from accessing funding for any of the 90% of the other services it provides, but also that this is going to expand well beyond Planned Parenthood into our hospitals, into our rural hospitals, and it's going to cut off, it's going to cut them off at the knees for providing funding for these other things that women need to access. So that's a concern of mine. And then the fact that we put in $6 million out of GR so that we could add that language through our budget bill that should not be in our budget bill.
Right.
And so that we didn't have to accept federal funds when they were available to us. So as much care as we talk about that went into this budget process, there are very deliberative places like this where we said quietly, let's turn our back on other sources and resources so that we can legislate through this process.
Well, I share your concerns as a matter of policy, and of course the fact that I have to couch it in terms of policy in the middle of a budget debate suggests the very problem that you're concerned with, which is that we are attempting to legislate through the budget.
Right, and you know, the choices that we have and the information that you were talking about with the senator from Phelps, our appropriations chair, you know, the moving the 27-point level down to 24 as we had, and then making a choice about whether we want it to go to 21, which still leaving it at 24 cut off 7,900 Missourians from accessing the in-home care that they need. 7,900 plus Missourians. So I agree with you. These are choices that have been imposed upon us that we are going to make, but we do have, I think we do have an option, and I think it's an interesting one because I agree with you. Every year in the past, I think the supplemental, when Senator Schaefer was here as the budget chair, I think one year there was $1 million in the supplemental budget.
Right.
So now to go to $100 million.
Right.
To clear the way for what may or may not occur in the economy. Wish I had that crystal ball to figure it all out. When we can do something like help our very vulnerable population, the seniors who live in Missouri who rent, the seniors who need help, as you said, to get out of bed in the morning or to deal with the various functions that they can no longer perform on their own throughout the day, such as cooking, such as getting their groceries brought to their house, whatever those needs are, such as being able to safely take a bath in the places where they live. I think these are choices that we would not have been forced to make a couple of years ago.
Well, and let's face it, we don't make them willingly now.
Pardon me?
It's not as if we make them willingly now.
No, and we don't. And I think that your point that, you know, by taking a few million dollars out of that $100 million bottom line that we're sitting on certainly makes sense to me to protect our families and our seniors going forward.
Well, I agree. Senator, thank you. Mr.
Thank
President.
You.
Mr. President.
Senator from the first, what purpose do you rise?
I inquire the senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the first?
Yes.
Senator from the first, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I wanted to inquire of you for two reasons. First, you had an amendment on this bill, I do believe, when it was last in the Senate. And second, my sixth sense just gave me the impression that you might have some things to say about House Bill 10 at this juncture in the proceedings.
We know you've been talking to the senator from the 24th, and I have to tell you that I agree with a lot of things that were said. And I am kind of amazed that the senator from the 24th managed to evade the eagle eye of the president of the Senate, who didn't even notice, you know, her having her back turned on the dais so much there. But that was good that she got away with it. I thought so.
Well, you know, it seems as though with the relaxing of that unwritten rule that, or maybe even written rule, it seems as though there's a grayer area, which was of greater concern to me in my first term in this body when I sat in either the most junior or the second most junior desk in the entire Senate. Now that I'm in the next to last row, it's less of a concern for me, but certainly for those on the front row, still a concern and sometimes complication.
Well, you know, we were talking about nursing home patients.
Yes.
And how they're totally at the mercy of the state, really. And when you're in the nursing home, what happens is that all of your assets slowly get drained away, and eventually you're just a pauper.
You have to spend down, yeah.
Every dime that you get in the form of, like, a Social Security payment or a pension payment ends up going to the nursing home, and I think they give you $30 a month to buy a candy bar every so often. And literally, once you're there and then you're that situation, there's no way for you to leave. You're stuck.
Yeah.
And you can't get there.
Well, the only place to go is to the hospital where it runs at a minimum hundreds and in some cases thousands of dollars a day. And we either as taxpayers or as health insurance premium payers subsidize that much more extravagantly than the line item that we're talking about in House Bill 11 when we get to it.
And another factor that people need to remember is that a lot of the people in nursing homes are veterans because the veterans homes can't take all of the veterans.
No, there's a long waiting list.
Right. And, you know, a lot of the little old ladies in nursing homes are the, you know, widows of veterans.
Yeah.
And they probably served their country in just about as strong a fashion by, you know, fighting the battle at home while their loved one was away, you know, in the military. And so I guess to me, the nursing home population being so vulnerable deserves just the best care that we can give it. And
I agree.
Then we have the disabled population. You know, they are also kind of at our mercy. There's just not enough money to really, you know, take really good care of them. And
Yeah. And
so when we go and we cut back the eligibility for them to get the services that they need, I mean, that affects their lives. I mean, we're talking real people and real effects on their lives.
Well, and let's face it, in many cases, shortens their lives.
Yes, definitely. You know, when you cut back the payment for the home and community-based providers, I mean, we had given them this increase. Now we're just sort of taking it away. The question that you've got to ask is, are they overpaid now? No. Well, they're underpaid now.
You can speak to that far better than I, Senator.
And one thing that I can tell you is, as a businessman or as a former private practice physician, is that if you have a business, let's say your overhead is 50%, and then you get a reduction in your payment of 3%, that's a 6% reduction on the bottom line. And if your overhead runs 90% and you get a 3% reduction in your payment, then that's a 30% reduction in your bottom line. Now, you know, we have this sheet of paper and it says we're just reducing it 3%. But it's really a lot more than that for the people who are getting the reduction.
Help me understand that.
Okay, let's just say that your overhead is $90 and your revenue is $100.
Right.
That means your profit margin is $10.
Right.
Okay, now let's just say you get a 3% reduction so that instead of getting $100, you're only getting $97.
Right.
Now your profit margin is $7. And so the difference is 30%. You went from $10 to $7. That's a 30% reduction. So it depends on what your overhead is. I mean, if you're one of these home and community-based providers that are already poorly reimbursed.
Operating on thin. The thinner the margin you are operating on, the more susceptible you are to the damage of these cuts.
Yeah, right. And if you are already running on just a very slim margin and you take a 3% cut, that means that you have to pay your providers, I mean the people who work for you, less. Well, now, some of these, I have to tell you, some of these places, they may not even pay much more than minimum wage.
Yeah.
And so now you're going to have a situation where in St. Louis, the people who, you know, work for these companies, they're going to have to get paid more. And here we are giving them,
right,
a cut. I mean, this is a big deal. And,
it is.
I heard you talking about granting the governor the opportunity to decide where to make the cuts.
Well, and these folks, the opportunity to have good revenue numbers come in over the next couple months before the end of the fiscal year so that none of this may need to happen.
Right. Well, I mean, it's probably more likely the next year that the governor will probably be making the cuts. I mean, given the state of the economy. But, to do what we're doing and to leave $198 million on the bottom line is, to me, is just almost unconscionable.
I agree.
And for me, you know, looking to see that, you know, changing that point count from 21 to 24 saves $16 million in GR, supposedly. It really strikes home to me that the touted cost of doing the Medicaid managed care expansion just happened to be $16 million, because they said they're going to save $20 million in the recontracting, and the total was $36 million. So basically what we've done here is we've thrown the senior citizens under the bus in return for giving this big lucrative contract to the managed care companies.
Well, I mean, and we're getting into House Bill 11. Of course, it's 10 that's on the floor right now. What I could make the same point in response to that observation that the senator from Phelps did to me, which is that, you know, apart from what we did on the K-12 formula, there are any number of places in our budget where we had that trade-off. And to the point you made a minute ago, the supplemental, really at this point, is at a place where we could do all of these things. We're simply not.
If we were to vote no on this budget, and of course I don't have any irrational belief that a majority of the members are going to vote no, since they've already voted for the 24 points already. I voted no, and I
right.
believe you voted no.
Yes.
But you know, if we did, why, we could go to special session, and we would have 10 and 11, and we could get rid of that managed care expansion. There's our $16 million. And we could fund the 21 points. We could take money off the bottom line. We could, you know, take care of the people in wheelchairs. We could do the provider rate increase. And instead of putting our most vulnerable people at risk and giving this money to these, managed care companies who we have given an undisclosed amount of campaign contributions to our governor and who is ignoring the constitutionality of it, we could actually take care of these people, these disabled and elderly people, and not do that. I mean, we would have the opportunity. I wish it would happen. But, you know, earlier in the session, Senator, I distributed a sheet to everyone explaining to them how you get to 21 points. Do you remember that?
It's been some time, so the answer is very vague.
There is a way that you achieve that 21 points, and it's things like taking multiple medications, being unable to dress yourself. I mean, and when you looked at that list, you thought to yourself, hey, anybody who's got 21 points is in bad enough shape that you probably ought to be in a nursing home.
Yeah, it needs our help, yeah.
And each person in this chamber ought to think about my mom, mother.
I got to tell you, my mother doesn't live in Missouri, but has had, and I'm going to sneeze in a second here. As soon as I say that, my mother has had multiple back surgeries, was injured on the job, almost 30 years ago, but her back has never been the same. It has deteriorated over time. And, you know, she is relatively fortunate in that she doesn't have a mortgage that she has to worry about. But the reality is just the same, given her physical limitations, having lost my father last year, I'm not quite prepared to deal with any of that, but God only knows what that could end up looking like.
Well, you know, it isn't very difficult to get to 21 points. I mean, you're a little bit confused, a little bit incontinent, take multiple medications, need a little bit of help dressing, need a little help feeding yourself. I mean, some of these things are significant, and then you get to 21 points. Now it's going to be even harder for these people, and the person that it could be harder for could be your mom.
Well, and look, any number of people that I represent in a district of 182,000 Missourians.
Right, and so where are we going to get the money? Because, I mean, you know.
The frustrating thing about it is we already have the money. We have the money in
the
supplemental.
But, you know, the thing that really gripes me is giving it to Centene, which gave an undisclosed amount of money to Greitens inaugural. I mean, how much money did Centene give Greitens? And he refused to stop the managed care expansion when he had a chance. And so that really, really upsets me. And here we are throwing the elderly under the bus.
Well, Senator, I don't know what your intentions are vis-a-vis House Bill 10 or 11. I will tell you that with respect to House Bill 10, I missed by one vote on an amendment that would have set the Senate into conference with a stronger position.
Well, we tried, Senator.
The Senator from the 24th did. Yes, you did as well.
And so I think we can stand tall and know that we tried to do the right thing. And all I'm going to do, my intention is very simple. I'm not going to stand and filibuster this bill. I'm just going to vote no. Which is what I did. The bill will pass. We'll go to 11. That one will pass. And then we'll be done with the budget. But I'll be very sad and ashamed of myself for being part of that.
Well, we have done our best, Senator. And with that, I'm going to see if anybody else wants to grab the floor. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I guess to inquire of the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 14th.
I guess so.
Senator from the 14th, you may proceed.
Thank you. I was going to, I was waiting for the Senator from the 1st to inquire of me. I had to walk out because we're getting updates on what happened to Senate Bill 22. There is some clarity that needs to be made with the amendments right now. On this issue, what I wanted to talk about specifically had to do with the spectrum of care. And I didn't intend to talk very long, but the first job I had in this building was working for the former lieutenant governor. I started, I want to say, in November of 2000. And as you know, the lieutenant governor is the senior advocate of the state, right? And so much of the work that I did for the former lieutenant governor has to do with senior citizens and understanding the spectrum of care. Sure. So the way that I'm interpreting what happened in the decision-making yesterday in the conference committee is such that nursing homes are going to have a higher qualification for individuals to go in, and then on the other side of the spectrum, which is in-home care, something that I really care about, something that I've run on from the very first time I've ever run for office. I mean, I could tell you why. But on that end of things, they're not being properly funded at all either. So you look at the middle of the spectrum of care, and it's more for seniors or whoever to get into nursing homes. There's less money for in-home care on this side. So you have the middle. And there's a huge gap in between. And actually, the artistry to get this through, depending on that circuit breaker, it was superb. It's just heartless. Artistry of it was probably one of my favorite chess games ever.
Right.
On
that's
this.
Exactly what it was.
But it's heartless.
Right.
And so that's why I am concerned. Obviously, my mind right now is on Senate Bill 22 and looking at what the changes were on that in committee. Obviously, our mothers are watching it back at home. They've been watching it like a hawk.
Or just mom's STL.
Over here. Yeah. And others because
right.
They care. It sets an important precedence in a way. But one of the reasons why I always supported in-home care in my work for the former lieutenant governor, I always wanted to know why is it such. There's some report that I saw that I think it was the New York Times at that point, and it said something to the effect that more seniors of color stay at home as they age rather than other groups. So Caucasians typically, I hate to say it like this, but y'all send your seniors
we ship
to
our seniors
nursing
off.
Homes. Yes, y'all do. According to this New York Times
right.
article.
I actually saw that article.
So. And so when you're Hispanic, when you're Asian, African American, and that's what happened in the house that I live in. My great-great-aunt Tweet and my great-great-aunt Lucille both lived in the house. In fact, the room that I sleep in, both my great-great-aunt and my great-great-aunt Tweet, Aunt Lucille and Aunt Tweet, they stayed in the bedroom that I live in right now. And not until the very end, when my mom could not take care of them any longer, because we have a philosophy in our family that we take care of our own until we're unable to. That is just our culture. The same thing happened to my great-grandmother, which there's a funny story about her. Her nickname was Coco. And she used to try to climb the fence in my grandpa's house in Puerto Rico and say that she was trying to find one of her five husbands. She was like married five times. she smoked even as she had Alzheimer's and all that. But in any case, we take care of our seniors. In my family, it is our culture to take care of our seniors in our home until we can't. And so for my great-great-aunt Tweet and my great-great-aunt Lucille, we, at the last 6 months, last 3 months of their lives, they went to the nursing home that's probably three blocks from my house. So we still had them very close to us because my mom could not take care of them anymore, and they needed extra help. So that's why I've always been hardcore on in-home care.
Right.
Because and I remember the argument, this is 17 years ago, but I remember the argument being something to the effect that we save dollars as our seniors are in their home
Absolutely.
We're saving dollars. And so when you don't have the kind of funding that you need for that part of the spectrum of care, and then you're increasing the qualifications for one to go into a nursing home, you still have this huge gap. So you have assisted living, that's part of the spectrum of care. And then you have other things that are in the middle here. And then after today, I have not been able to pay attention to what's going on in D.C., but I've seen a couple of tweets to the effect that there are going to be death panels or something like that, at least from our perspective. Again, I haven't seen it as I should. But that's where I'm concerned about this, and I understand that, you know, in many people's opinion, it's draconian. It's a hard spot, I have to say. I am honestly listening to both sides of the story. I've had people who have been in my office today, and I'm quite interested in knowing what the recovery is going to be for this. So I have not, even though I think in this bill that we're in and then the next bill that we're in, there's some serious concerns I have, and I think I will be voting against both 10 and 11.
Right.
What I'm concerned about is the after effect after these measures pass. And the other question is, are they going, because I'm getting phone calls from other parts of the state, Carthage,
right.
Yeah, I don't know whose district that is, but I'm getting phone calls from all over the state. And what I told my assistant is, this is very similar to, I want to say, a right to work bill when I was in the House. It was this 800 series, 888, 878, something like that, where you were getting phone calls and faxes,
right, where
and
people
emails
are
all over
those,
the state. So I'm
right.
Starting to get those phone calls on the circuit breaker issue, and I guess the nursing home issue and then the in-home care issue. I am concerned, and I don't know where it's going to take us, but I wanted to verbalize that publicly to let all sides know that, you know, I'm seriously looking at all sides of this, as many as possible.
Well, and if I can just sort of add, so, you know, I also think that this legislature, when we go forward and support this, we're being penny wise and pound foolish, because as you said, when people get less care in their homes, when they need care to get up in the morning, to take care of themselves, to dress themselves, to do all those things that they need to do to live a life, if they need somebody 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, and they're going to be cut back to 2 hours a day, 3 days a week, that's significant. What happens to them on those other 2 days if there isn't someone around to take care of them?
It constrains the family.
And family, you know what? Most families, both parents work. These are some difficult situations that we're asking people to cover. So what happens? Those people end up not being able to continue to live in their home, to take care of themselves. Then they do end up in a nursing home. And if they do that through our Medicaid program, I mean, before I thought that the annual expense for that was estimated at $39,000. Now the last number I read was $63,000. So what we're doing is we're trading off 4 hours a week of care for somebody to go into a nursing home that's going to cost the state significantly more money.
Yeah, and the difference between in-home care versus nursing homes is anywhere from 6 to 8 times difference. The difference
right.
is six
Absolutely.
To eight times.
So again,
the amount.
You know, we're making decisions today and not thinking about, well, how is this going to play out in the big picture, in the long haul, and what's going to happen to those individuals that we are depriving of these services that they need to live a decent and normal life. So it's very, very concerning to me that these are the options and this is the chess game that's been played and that's been put before.
And I have to say, it was masterful.
It was masterful because it ties all those things together to us passing HCB 3,
it's
the circuit breaker
point.
Which again, in that bill, we're taking away an annual one-time rebate of taxes that are paid to low-income seniors. So at an average of $500 a year is what we're talking about for these individuals.
people who count on, these are seniors and people with disabilities. So people who count on this money to pay for a repair they've needed to make or a product that they need to make their lives easier. Maybe it's
or
one
catch
of those.
Up. Here's what I would hear in my district. How to catch up on all those medications because it costs a lot. And
right.
So, like, there are literally seniors and otherwise who are living from check to check. We've heard this from the very beginning, but
right.
It's real.
Right.
And the part that I'm most concerned about is this is the recovery point. So,
right.
And then
this is where all your bills get reconciled and you can start again and try to make it through the year
yeah.
and still eat and take your medication.
Yeah. Right. And people are making that decision. It's so sad, really. You know, and I think about what's being said at the federal level about people who are just barely making it. And I see it firsthand with people in my own community and the number of people. So we have the, what is that? It's on Olive. It's one of the food shelters. Anyway, there are a number of families who go there. I remember maybe 4 or 5 years ago, they said that
Operation Food Search.
Yes,
is that
Operation
right?
Food Search. It's right down the street. And they were saying that 4,000 kids in my district, 4,000 in my district per week are served by Operation Food Search. And then when you hear the seniors and some of the folks who are unemployed, I mean, they're going there, too, trying to make it. I mean, we're talking about, like, have you ever had a sandwich with nothing in it? I actually have, her name is Rudy. I have someone who's in my district who talks about just making a sandwich with mustard, and that's all you have?
Yes, I have been in that position before. So.
And it's devastating, you know? You know, there are people who, I don't think they're joking about it because it's the reality. They're talking about the ramen noodles and then
right.
all the stuff you, and these are grown adults who are working. And
right.
so just think about our seniors. I mean, we're getting to a point, even myself, the way that I'm changing is I have these raised gardens. So, in fact, they're going to be put in tomorrow. I'm so
raised
excited.
Beds where you
yes.
plant vegetables.
Raised gardens because
right.
uh-huh. I live in a concrete jungle. Four-by-fives, 2 4-by-5s, and I'm getting my, my goodness, John would probably love the fact that I'm talking about this stuff. It's not mulch, but it's called compost
right.
and some other stuff. So, and then we got some peat moss, and then
right.
I'm really geeked about this, so I shouldn't be talking about it, but I'm really geeked about my raised gardens. But what I am growing is turnips. Because I love turnip greens. I love spinach. I love all of these things, radishes. I'm doing all this stuff to supplement my own life.
Right. Well,
and so
late.
I'm thinking about other people who cannot get a raised garden,
right.
who cannot do all of these things. And this is what they depend on. This is the difference. And it frankly reminds me, back in the day when I was a little girl, we used to go picking on farms. Now I'm scared to death about what farms I went on picking because they probably had radioactive waste in it. But that's a whole different consideration. But what they used to do, Betty Baker, who lives right around the corner, Betty and Bill Baker, and their four children, we used to go to the farm to go picking, and then we would get all of these green beans, and we would get okra and all this other stuff, and they had a deep freezer in the basement. That's also another change that we're making in my life and what I've encouraged my residents to do as well, because we are living under a different administration, and it's important to store your food just in case something happens and you don't have enough. These are real considerations I'm talking to you about, Senator. These are real considerations. I am having to tell my residents to go get a deep freezer, go picking, grow your own food so that you can eat. Like, this is real. I'm not playing when I'm saying this. I'm not actually being real about this. I'm actually being real. So I'm learning about how do you, like, you get all your apples and your peaches and then you store them. I'm not kidding. I'm learning all this stuff because I'm trying to get prepared and get everybody else prepared because of the administration we're in. And just think, I have a job. What
right.
about these seniors who don't have a job?
Right. Fixed income, assuming.
Who don't
income.
Have anything.
Right. Right.
Who don't have anything. So that's why I'm sensitive to this.
So if you will let me just
you know, also in this budget, I think it's in 10, it may have been 11, NORC, so the naturally occurring retirement communities. So some of those are in my district.
Yes, they
where
are.
A propensity of seniors live. Now, these seniors are not in a condition where they're in such bad shape that they necessarily need in-home care. But they're people that we want to help age and age gracefully in their homes. But they may need some help and support. So this budget was at $300,000, excuse me, in the Senate, zero in the House. Thought we were going to try to hold the Senate position. We did not. It was lowered last night to $150,000. But let me tell you what that money goes to do. It goes to support a program that also brings in lots of volunteers. So if I'm a senior living in my home, I'm 85 years old, and my light bulb in my ceiling goes out, if I'm to get up on a step ladder and lose my balance, that could be the end of my life. So this organization, in addition to all the programs and the activities it provides for seniors to be social and to get together, it also sends people out to their homes to help with things they need. A rocky banister could be the death of someone who fell down the front steps. A light bulb needing to be changed. Something small needing to be fixed that someone, some good human being, some volunteer says, I'll go there, I'll do that. I will be, in essence, a lifeline to these people who need me to help them in their home so they can live and not end up in a nursing home, or maybe even avoid this in-home care that we're talking about.
Is it JCCA, I think?
It's the Jewish Community Center, the Jewish Federation Building, is a headquarters for it. So a lot of people are under the misconception that this is...
My cousin lives in, I guess, I don't know what
Covenant
you call
House?
It. Yeah, whatever's at the Jewish, the JCCA...
On those grounds, Covenant
yeah,
House.
Yeah, he lives in your district in one of those, I guess, assisted living homes or whatever it is, right off of Lindbergh.
Well, all kinds of people live there, and a lot of people assume because it's based out of the Federation Building that it's just for people who are Jewish. That's
he's
not
black,
the case.
He's
it's
not Jewish.
Based on the neighborhood. So it is in neighborhoods that have a high density of senior population designed specifically to support those seniors so they don't need to go into
and that's part of the spectrum of care that I was talking about.
Yes, exactly.
It's part of, because it costs so much more to be in a nursing home, but there are people
right.
who need to be in a nursing home, even temporarily, that need to be in a nursing home. I get that. Don, my former neighbor, one of my best friends that a teenager could ever have, who is like, I guess he was a dancer. Don was a dancer. And in the 1930s, and let me tell you what Don used to tell me about. He used to make tomato soup using ketchup packets and putting water in it. That was my best friend.
Oh.
And he was a dancer, and I never forgot that. And as a teenager, I would make food for him and take it over, you know, and then he would be on the porch. He would always be fixing up his house, but he would love Pepsi. And so I would make him food. I just adopted him as an old man. I adopted Don because he was just one of those folks. That's why I care about our seniors who are living in their homes. And it was very hard. Don had, Don Walker is his name, and he has passed on now. But every year in my mom's neighborhood, which is in the 4th Senate District, there would be Rags to Riches, which was a neighborhood garage sale, which I participated in, but Don had all the stuff that you wanted, and people would come out to help him get everything out, and that is how he made his money per year to stay in his house, was Rags to Riches.
Oh, my.
Rags to Riches. And so the entire time that I lived in this neighborhood, Don was fixing up on his house, his home, and I would be watching him as he did stuff that's, you know, construction like I didn't understand, but I would watch him and pretend that I was learning. But he was my best pal. Now, he didn't look like me. He was a white old man with white hair. And he was my best friend in the entire world. I will never forget Don. There's a picture that I used to keep on my Twitter page of me and Don, you know. And when I first ran for office, he gave my mom $5 to give to my campaign.
Oh.
You give this to Nikki. That's my nickname, by the way. So in any case, that
Nikki?
Was Nikki. After Nikki Giovanni.
Oh.
Yes. Nicole, Nikki. Yeah. So I usually don't mention that publicly, but I just did. Anyway,
It's just between us.
Oh, and the world. Right. But in any case, he was my best pal, and I know the sacrifices that he made to sustain his life. And again, not until the very end did he have to go to a nursing home, but he did everything that he possibly could to stay in his home. And the neighbors would help take care of him and all of that. He was a great neighbor. And part of the reason why I support in-home care is because, and this is what I started saying, like, I guess the first time I ran in 2004, is because we want to stabilize our communities and keep seniors safe. That's why, you know, dealing with 10 and 11, I'm like, both of these groups are getting screwed over.
Yeah.
I care about both of them.
Right.
You know, but I just... Neighborhoods need their seniors. They want to stay in their communities. And for communities of color like mine, we have seniors who stay in their homes longer. And I sit my pitch at the door when I would go door to door. I don't want you to go to a nursing home unnecessarily.
Right.
But like my family, at that point where you have to go and your family can't take care of you any longer and you can't do adult daycare any longer, then you need to have that ability to move on. You need to have that ability, and when the requirements go up. And see, here's the other part about it. The other part about this entire thing is when you're in the middle, I think you're in the middle, I'm in the middle, thank goodness I have four-legged babies and not two-legged babies. But I'm in a situation where I have to help my mother. But if I had children, I would be right in the middle trying to take care of my children too. And so you have to make that consideration when you're in that middle, when you're taking care
right.
of two generations,
right.
it wears you down, and your productivity at your job, whatever it may be, wears you down. You're not where you need to be at work to take care of your family.
Well,
so that's why it's just a bad situation that we're in all around.
Well, and let me just share a story with you. Well, both of my parents are alive and well and healthy and living in their homes. And they have some challenges, but we've been able to deal with them as a family and support each other. So I spend most of my days on Saturday with one or both of them. My mother-in-law, who has Alzheimer's, a few weeks ago she fell and broke her hip. And can you imagine if you have Alzheimer's with a broken hip, you don't remember you don't remember when you awaken that you have a broken hip, and you don't understand why standing up is going to be a problem or why you can't do these things. So that's a challenge, and it's just been heartbreaking to my husband and I. And my mother-in-law lives in Kansas City because her daughter was there, her daughter who just died this past January. So a lot of change is going on in our family. Well, my mother-in-law, she's healthy, even though she has Alzheimer's, and she was a former school teacher. She's the most wonderful woman, and people love her. And she was healing well from this, not too long ago, break of her hip. And they moved her back into this Alzheimer's care facility where she was before. And she was back one day. And they said they were going to watch her because I was very concerned. You know, don't let her stand up on her own. She needs help and support, and she needs to be able to move around. But, you know, people are being pushed in and out of hospitals and other places. First day she's back, she gets up and falls down. And so that's a problem. We finally got her to be watched much more regularly, we thought. And then just the beginning of this past week, my husband got a call. They had visited her room at 8 in the morning and then went back at noon, so 4 hours. And in that time, that lapse should never have occurred, but in that time, she had a stroke, and she had it too much earlier to be able to get the medicine that relieves you of all the symptoms of the stroke. So now she is suffering from the results of a stroke and paralysis, partial paralysis, that she is now going into rehab for. So I tell you this story because our family is fortunate. We are able to... And my mother-in-law and my father-in-law had done such a good job of taking care of their finances over the year. They both had good-paying jobs. He was a union TWA guy, and she was a school teacher. And So now we're able to pay for her care out of her own funds. But I think about the families who go through those exact same situations that we have that can't take care of themselves. So to have somebody come into the house and check on you, to have somebody look after what your needs are, to give you the bonus of $500 at the end of the year to utilize in support of yourself for whatever you may need.
Now you're talking about the circuit breaker.
I'm talking about the circuit breaker because these things are all related through our budget bills. These dollars, the access to care, these things make a difference in people's lives. My family, my husband, his mother, my parents, they are fortunate, and I am so thankful for that.
You just reminded me of something, and if you will bear with me,
yeah.
I'm going to mention a name that is very dear to you, but especially dear to me. And I found this. I can't remember. It's Harriet Woods.
Sure.
I keep all of her emails, by the way.
Okay.
I've never deleted one email
from her. Our former lieutenant governor.
Our former lieutenant governor and my mentor. I was her last mentee. Rachel Storch would have been the next to last mentee. But there's something that she wrote me, and I'm going back to like 2006.
Uh-huh.
I keep all of these emails. But, and I don't know which one it is, so I'm going to have to do a different search for this. But she talks about the circuit breaker. And you're going to love, this is before I was ever even elected, I want to say, where she talked about this. So it has to be in 2004, the email that I'm referencing that deals with Harriet. But one of the things she said is that she was one of a few people who understood how the circuit breaker worked. And so she said, everyone would always come to me, and I'm paraphrasing it right now because
sure.
I can't find the email. She said, everybody would come to me because I'm the one who knew about it. And her instruction to me was, know more than your colleagues on an issue because you'll gain respect. Well, I'm living that out right now. I'm literally living that out, and I didn't think that I would necessarily, but I am. Because of this radioactive waste issue, the education issue, you know, multiple issues that we're dealing with, in, at least in my district, education, Ferguson, all of that. Let's see. This is it. Oh, let's see. We don't get good reception in here sometimes. Oh, look at here. She's talking about Jim Conway. She's going all the way back to... Yes, it was tough in 1977. This is literally the words of Harriet in an email to me. As I said in my book, women in the Capitol were expected to be behind a typewriter or in bed. The guys may be thinking the same thing today, but reality is overtaking them. Women are leaders. You can outthink and outmaneuver them. The first year, she's talking, the first year is usually pretty humbling. I wouldn't have handled a bill except that Jim Conway left the Senate to run for mayor, and I took over a tax credit bill to aid older neighborhoods. But you can be a watchdog on some issues that are important to you and your district. You might even develop authority or expertise in some very specific topic. With me, it was the circuit breaker. Democrats had the majority in my day, but urban liberals were a minority within the minority, and it was a tough going. But I was always able to succeed on votes regarding seniors because no one really understood the circuit breaker, and they figured that I did. Most legislators, which is true, are lazy and never read the stuff. That's Harriet Woods.
Well,
1977, she's talking in an email from 2004.
Wow.
That's what she said about the circuit breaker, so I'm glad that I found it.
Right, right. So
that's why I'm going to, whatever bill comes up, I'm going to be voting no. I represent the seat that Harriet came from, which I'm very proud of.
Sure.
I think some of the smartest senators, there are a lot of characters historically in this in this place. Some of them not even from the area in which I represent. I've been in this building for 17 years now, started off with the former lieutenant governor, and I have to tell you, I've met a lot of these extraordinary characters. But as I stand in the seat that I am in today, I stand on the shoulders of some remarkable people. And Harriet was one of them. Rita was one of them.
Right.
Wayne Good was one of them. He actually is the only one who understood in and out, backwards and forwards, in five different languages, education and the formula. He's the only one outside of the new guy, Don. But Wayne Good understood it. Rita Days would question on every single bill that came up.
Right.
Harriet Woods was a stickler, and she used to, there's a picture of her, forgot the guy's name, he's African American, but there's a picture in the Secretary of State's possession at the Kirkpatrick building of Harriet and this black guy who's a state rep smoking a cigar. So that's one of the reasons why I don't mind having a cigar or two once in a while, because I can say my predecessor was in this same chamber with her cigar when it was okay to actually smoke cigars
right.
in this room.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? We were just talking about that today, whether people were smoking on the Senate floor at some point in time.
Well,
and we
Harriet
decided,
was one of them.
Right.
A
amazing.
Woman.
Yeah.
She's one of those folks, well, I can't say that on the floor, but she was pretty courageous.
Yes.
And which is the reason why I am the way I am. She was my mentor. She was. And she was an exemplary woman.
Yes.
But a leader. And I don't think that there's anyone who can match her leadership and her caring. She's also one of the few people who understood the box that I'm in as a black woman from St. Louis County. She understood, and that's why she stood by me, because she knew that there were some who would be on one side who would never even open the door to invite me to an event. And then she knew, there's an email on that one too. And then she knew on the other side that it's so unfortunate that black people don't like smart other smart black people. She knew that I was in that box, or I didn't fit in a box, because I wasn't rich. So I wasn't invited to the fundraisers over here. And she knew that I was too smart to hang out with people who were on the other side. So she took me under her wing because she identified. And by the way, here's what the funniest thing, I can't believe I'm talking about Harriet, but I love her. The funniest thing about all of this is Harriet, at the end of her life, she had a black beautician, because she had a Jufro. She had a Jufro. And so she went to this African-American woman because she said, she's the only one who could cut my hair right. Anyway, I thought that was funny.
That's a great story.
Anyway, that's why I'm voting against Circuit Breaker. I wanted to get some things out on 10 and 11.
You're voting to keep Circuit Breaker in, so you're voting
against
the bill.
Yes,
right.
I want to keep Circuit Breaker the way that it is. I did want to verbalize my issues with House Bill 10 and House Bill 11.
Right.
This is absolutely devastating.
Right.
You know, to a lot of people, and for our office, I don't know if other offices are getting these calls statewide, but I know that our phones have been going nonstop on this issue, on these issues dealing with seniors. So that's the conversation that I wanted to have on the floor.
Well, we're getting those calls too, all day long on 11 in particular. So yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for
thank
the
you
inquiry.
For the inquiry.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Seeing none, Senator from Phelps. Senator from Phelps, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close on the adoption of the conference committee report for House Bill 10.
The Senator from Phelps moves that the conference committee report on Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill number 10 be adopted. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail will vote aye. Those of the contrary will vote no. Madam Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls. Dixon. Igel. Emery. Hageman. Holzman. Hoskins. Hummel. Kehoe. Koenig. Kraus. Leibola. Munslinger. Nasheed. Onder. Richard. Riddle. Rizzo. Romine. Rowden. Sater. Schoff. Schatz. Shoup. Sifton. Sylvie. Wallingford. Walsh. Wasson. Whelan.
Senator from the ninth votes aye.
Senator from Butler votes no.
Senator from Franklin. Madam Secretary, call the absentees, if any. There are no absentees. By a vote of 22 ayes and 11 noes, the conference committee report is adopted. Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I now move that conference committee report on Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill 10 be third read and finally passed.
You have heard the motion made by the senator from Phelps. Does any senator desire to be heard on the bill? Seeing no discussion, the senator from Phelps is recognized to close.
I close.
The senator from Phelps moves that conference committee report for Senate committee substitute for House committee substitute for House Bill number 10 be read a third time and finally passed. To those of the opinion that motion shall prevail will vote aye. Those of the contrary will vote no. Secretary, read the bill and call the roll.
Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 10, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Mental Health, the Department of Health and Senior Services, and the several divisions and programs thereof. Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibola, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
By a vote of 22 ayes and 11 noes, the bill receiving a constitutional majority is declared passed. Hearing no objection, let the journal show that the titling and perfecting motions were made and carried. Senator from Cole.
President, your committee on, without objection, the Senate will go the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Hearing no objection, the order of business is reports of standing committees. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Send the report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Bill number 486, begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been duly enrolled and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate substitute for Senate Bill number 182, begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been duly enrolled and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully submitted, Senator Kehoe, Chairman.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the benefit of the body, Monique Wu from the Columbia, Missouri, has been granted permission to take photos and videos in the chambers today.
Duly noted.
Mr. President, would you inquire from the Secretary if there are messages from the House? If so, I'd ask them to please be read.
Madam Secretary, please read the messages from the House.
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee Report on Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 12 as amended, and has taken up and passed Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 12. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed Senate Committee Substitute, House Committee Substitute, House Bill 13. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and adopted the Conference Committee Report on Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 17 as amended, and has taken up and passed Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 17. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed Senate Committee Substitute, House Committee Substitute, House Bill 18. Respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senator, going to order business of announcements.
The order of business is announcements. Announcements. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the benefit of the body, appreciate everybody hanging in there. We're going to take a short dinner break. My recess motion will be to roughly 6:30 p.m., unless the Senator from Cape Girardeau wants me to do 6:31. And we will come back and get back to work on budget bills and other things before us.
The Senator from Cole moves that this body... Further announcements. Senator from Buchanan.
Just to inquire the Senator from Cole.
Senator from Cole, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
So, Senator, you're intending for us to take a dinner break. I imagine that since if we went to 11 and got it passed, we would all be able to probably, like, drive home, that the going to the dinner break might actually imply that you're intending for us to come back tomorrow.
Is that correct? Yeah, you asked me about this earlier.
And so at that time, you didn't have a complete answer. And
That's fair enough. We wanted to see how it would go today. But, yeah, we were going to take a dinner break, come back roughly at 6:30, and work through the rest of the budget bills as possible, and then tomorrow morning go to Senate bills for perfection.
So you don't anticipate we would go to Senate bills for perfection today?
Well, I don't, and if I can tell you why, the amount of traffic we've just done today creates an incredible amount of work behind those walls. And if we stayed in session, Senator, later tonight, because the issues in front of us on those perfection bills might take a little discussion, and we'd be here long, which, as you know, I'm not opposed to, but I don't want to not close the journal for the folks on the other side of the wall. You understand what I'm saying?
I'd rather
them be able to get their work done.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to kind of have an idea because, you know, I need to make plans and probably got to call a hotel and make a reservation.
On behalf of the city of Jefferson and the county of Cole, thank you.
You're welcome, Senator. Thank you.
Further announcements. Further announcements. Seeing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Senate stand in recess until 6:30 p.m. this day.
The Senator from Cole moves that the Senate stand in recess until 6:30 p.m. this day. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate is in recess until 6:30 today.